Whispered Pain, written by Ashley Fontaine, narrated by Andrea Ems. Chapter 1. Questions. What does it mean to be alive? It's an age-old conundrum with various answers. Some are universal. To touch, taste, smell, see, hear, and feel. It might be the gentle fingers of a mother, stroking the soft skin of her newborn. Or is it the taste of a sumptuous meal on your tongue? What about the smell of summer rain, freshly mown grass, your lover's scent? Maybe it's drinking in the vibrant colors of the sky at sunset, or the shimmering moon as it peaks over a snow-covered mountain. Perhaps the answer is joyous squeals of children's laughter as they play without worry, still cocooned away inside naivete, experiencing a moment of pure ecstasy when you climax, or the soul-crushing sorrow when you lose a loved one? The rush of endorphins flooding your body while bungee jumping or skydiving. I could go on and on, but you get my drift. Being alive is all of those things, and a host of numerous others. What one person considers living may be the stuff of nightmares to another. But in the end, it's all about breathing, blood flow, heartbeats, sensation, consciousness, awareness, reasoning, synchronicity. Why, are you wondering, do I pose such a loaded question? To stir debate, engage your brain cells, force a deep conversation about life in general? Oh, no, nothing so lofty. It's quite simple, really. I just want to know, want to feel, want to see, want to anything again. Because I'm lost, wandering, disoriented, disjointed and distorted. I am no longer associated with anything. The sensations of all senses elude me. Mere blips of faded memories tumble around me. I can't recall how it felt to be kissed or hugged. What a belly laugh was like. How boredom felt. Bone-weary tiredness? Nothing. I feel nothing. Anticipation, nervousness, grief, energy, regret. Oh, did I fail to mention why? Because I'm no longer among the living. At least, I don't think I am. To be honest, I'm not quite sure. I don't remember my name, my age, or even my sex. I don't feel. I can't smell. I hear, but sounds don't register emotional responses anymore. I see, but it's all in muted grays, no vibrant colors. Dead. Lifeless. Dull. No sense of time, space, awareness. I just float. Yeah, float. Like a weightless cloud drifting through the limitless universe. No purpose. No destination. No set trajectory. No rhyme or reason. I don't know where I am, how I arrived at this point, this numbed state. Ebony nothingness has swallowed me whole. I'm not sure of anything. Can you? Will you help me? I need to know. Want to know. Have to know. Who am I? Where am I? How do I escape this black void? Help. Please help me. I'm begging you. Chapter 2. Wicked Weather. Wynton Brewer sighed and stared out the small window. He thought about rubbing his tired eyes, but didn't, worried it would make them burn more than they already did. After exposing them to the frigid temperatures for the past 8 hours, Wynton was surprised his contacts weren't stuck to his eyeballs. He almost smiled while he took in view of the streets of downtown Little Rock. The blacktop was covered in piles of pristine white fluff, postcard-quality fairyland, fit for a Christmas card or oil painting. The streetlights bounced off the icy canvas, making the light even more intense. The slushy, slick indentations, made from the tires of the onslaught of cars full of panicked drivers only hours ago, were no longer visible. The rare winter storm belched and spewed the heavy, wet snow for hours, causing drifts to pile up to a foot in some places. The residents of central Arkansas, horrible drivers on sunny days, deplorable in harsh weather, were unaccustomed to driving in the slippery mess. En masse, they fled their offices and homes when the first few flakes appeared. They rushed to their nearest convenience stores in droves. It seemed like all of the population had been ingrained with strange ideas about what to do when a snowstorm arrived. Ransacked the aisles in a rabid quest for milk and bread. It's what everyone did. Even sweet Amy sent him a text when it first started. Amy said her nursing class was canceled, and she was on her way to pick up milk and bread from the store, wanting to know if he needed anything. He had chuckled at the text, sent a reply stating no, he didn't need anything, and for Amy to be careful. After working the first accident, Winton worried about his girlfriend of 6 months. The anxiety grew in size as the snow continued to fall. When Amy texted and said she was at Winton's apartment, all snuggled under the covers and waiting for him, he smiled. For some odd reason, it was at that precise moment, Winton knew he was in love with Amy, and once they both finished school, he would pop the question. He would enlist the help of Amy's older sister, Lita, to pick out just the right ring. Amy loved everything Lita loved, including her career choice as a nurse. So whatever design Lita liked, so would Amy. Winton grew up in Oregon and had only been in Arkansas for a few years. He wondered if urgency to hit the grocery store like a pack of ravenous wolves had always been part of the Southern mindset, or if it was some newly planted idea by the marketing machine of Walmart. All he knew for sure was the moment the meteorologists started using words like chance of snow and potential winter weather in their forecasts, the entire state seemed to run out of milk and bread within hours. It made no sense to Winton. Milk and bread? He wouldn't want to be stuck inside for an undetermined amount of time and try to survive off milky toast. Winton preferred real food, like steak, potatoes, and cornbread. His stomach growled at the thought of food. He hadn't eaten since breakfast, and it was almost 5:30 at night. The dispatch radio at Turnage Wrecker Service was quiet. Finally. From the minute the first delicate piece of frozen liquid fell from the sky, the activity level had been off the charts. He worked 23 accidents on Interstate 30 and another 7 more on the side streets leading out of downtown. It only took one stupid driver to flip out when the back end of their vehicle started to squirm and all hell broke loose. That driver then slammed into another freaked-out driver in a chain reaction, replayed numerous times on the slippery roads. He laughed inside his mind, thinking about all the whining and complaining of the local insurance agents, parading their tired, worn-out faces on TV as they promised their clients to do everything to make their worlds right once more. How hard they worked to sort through all the claims and get cars back in running order. 2 years ago, when a smaller storm hit, that's what they had done. After the blustery weather this time, Winton knew it would be even worse. Winton's anger flared for a split second. He'd been the one freezing his family jewels off. The howling winds whipped the shards of cold snow in his face while he loaded up the dented hunks of metal and fiberglass to the back of his wrecker. Unlike some fat, lazy office workers, all cozy and warm inside their cubicles, whose only work injuries might be carpal tunnel syndrome. It was sort of nice letting his anger kick in, because it helped warm his frozen blood. Winton slumped in the rickety office chair and ignored his co-workers. They stomped around the warm office, snow and patches of ice flung in all directions while they shook off the cold. He had homework to finish. One more semester and he would be done with school. Winton chuckled to himself as he flipped open his math textbook and began to work the problems out on the stiff paper in front of him. Had the weathermen been wrong, which they were more often than right, Winton would be turning in a blank math paper and receive a big fat zero in class tomorrow. Winton hated math. He'd already finished all his other homework, including his English essay on his thoughts about sexual abuse in A Rose for Emily, with ease and a smile on his face. Math was another story. It was like studying ancient hieroglyphics every time Winton looked at the equations in front of him. So, at least some good came of the mess outside. It gave him some extra time to pop a few brain cells while trying to digest the problems. He couldn't wait for the last semester to be over. Degree in hand, he could start applying for teaching jobs rather than freezing his balls off in the winter or sweating bullets in the summer. Winton had seen enough death and destruction, bodies mangled and bleeding, appendages missing, heads pulverized beyond recognition, inside twisted piles of metal to last him two lifetimes. Teaching high school kids would be less traumatic and, hopefully, not invade his dreams like his current job did. He tipped his mental hat to the cops and paramedics who worked the gruesome accident scenes time and time again. Thankfully, the latest bout of winter weather only brought fender benders and a few bruises. Winton only had the chance to work out three quadratic equations before the radio sparked to life. He cringed when the office manager, Nanette, responded to the police officer reporting the traffic accident. Two victims had just been extracted from the wreckage. The vehicle would require the lowboy since the car was demolished at the scene. Slamming his book shut, he almost collided with another driver, Frankie Harper, as they scrambled to gather their gear and bundle up. Once outside, faces down in an attempt to block the wicked air, they fired up the truck. The accident was only 5 miles from their location, and the bright headlights danced across the shimmering snow as the heavy wrecker lumbered through the quiet streets. Not another vehicle in sight. Winton's throat tightened when he pulled up, the headlights from his truck illuminating the scene in front of him. The first thing he noticed was the spattering of red all over the crumpled hood of the BMW, the windshield shattered. The mound of snow in front of the car was no longer white. It was blood red. Winton swallowed the bile in his throat, wishing he was back at the office, working on algebra. Chapter 3. Prepping. Angie admired her swollen belly in the bathroom's full-length mirror. Motherhood was a term she wasn't sure would ever be applied to her life. And here she was, smack dab near the end of the second trimester, boobs the size of watermelons, feet so swollen they looked like blocks of wood, and a sketchy memory. She was thankful the horrific morning sickness had passed, but it had been replaced by bouts of cravings for the same food for weeks. At least she didn't hunger for pickles and ice cream or some other odd food combination. Her latest kick was burritos and cheese dip for lunch and dinner, and yogurt, oats, and blueberries for breakfast. The thought of eating anything else made her stomach queasy. Angie wondered how much longer the food choice would last and what the next few weeks of culinary delights her body would crave. If someone had told her 15 years ago she'd be carrying a child, Angie would have looked at them like they were aliens. Of course, the same thoughts and feelings had been part of her psyche regarding marriage. All of her negative emotions associated with marriage and motherhood disappeared when Drake Benson burst into her world 10 years before. Angie's slender fingers moved with a slight tremble as she caressed the taut skin. She reached over and grabbed the almond butter off the counter, squirted out a handful, and rubbed it over her stretched tummy. She tried not to wince when her fingers grazed across the thick, dark stretch marks. Angie loved everything about being pregnant, except what it had done to the skin around her stomach and ass, along with bouts of what Drake lovingly called pregnancy brain. She stretched her sore muscles. The exercise routine was getting harder and harder to complete as her midsection increased in size, but Angie was determined to keep herself fit. Besides, it was good for the baby. Every time she did yoga, the relaxation calmed the future soccer star inside her. This was the first day back to her regular yoga workout, and Angie sure felt it. All the effort and struggle would be worth it, though. It would make the delivery much easier, and though Drake never said a negative word about her changing body, on occasion, Angie noticed the displeasure behind his eyes. She could see through the mask of excitement and heard a twinge of concern sometimes in his sugary words. Her husband worried his wife's once sexy body would never be the same. Oh, stop it, Angie. Drake is just as happy as you are. The hormones running amok inside your bloodstream are making you imagine things. Though she never said a word to him, or anyone else for that matter, Angie worried about her figure too. Hell, ever since the stick turned blue, she worried about everything. Angie was pushing hard on 40's door, and her life prior to carrying a child in her womb hadn't exactly been lived with the utmost care. There had been too much wine, too many late nights out with Drake, schmoozing would-be clients, on her feet for 12-hour shifts at work. It all had taken a toll on her body. Angie shook her head to rid herself of the thoughts. Silly hormonal-induced concerns full of shallow, useless worries. Like Drake said, pregnancy brain. A life was growing inside her. A beautiful miracle made by two people in love. Parenthood was right around the corner, and Angie was letting old fears she tried to hide for years get to her. It didn't matter if Drake wasn't 100% on board about being a father. How could she expect him to be? He didn't have the bond yet. Their child wasn't wiggling around in his body, keeping him up at night while he or she practiced kicking extra points. Their connection would happen when the little one arrived. Angie smiled at the memories of the late-night ritual Drake started the minute she told him the good news. Right after they climbed under the sheets, he would rest his head on her abdomen and have a conversation with their child. At first it was only short, sweet, and to-the-point things, but as her belly grew in size, the one-sided conversation did as well. Each night, Drake would tell their baby a bedtime story. He would end the ritual by planting a gentle goodnight kiss on Angie's navel when finished. It was downright adorable and made Angie tear up almost every time. Drake Benson, the tough-as-nails lawyer, was going to make an excellent father. The morning ritual completed, Angie finished dressing and headed to the kitchen to fix breakfast and take her prenatal pills. It was strange to be at home. After her bleeding scare almost 2 weeks ago, even though her obstetrician gave his blessing, her father and mother insisted Angie stay home another week. Well, her mother insisted. Her father only nodded his head in agreement, occasionally spouting out medical terminology about the dangers of spontaneous bleeding during pregnancy, the possible causes and potential remedies. Angie didn't put up much of a protest. As a nurse, she was well aware of the dangers. Always the doctor, her father kept his cool. However, her mom fawned and cooed over her like Angie was a sick child. Her mom stayed at the house for 4 full days. She insisted Angie remain in bed and waited on her hand and foot. Even though it had been over 30 years since the death of her younger sister Amelia, Angie's mom never quite recovered from the trauma of losing her youngest child. Though Angie didn't understand it at the time, as she grew up and started to study science, she discovered Amelia had been born with Down's syndrome. Her arrival was a surprise to begin with, and her medical condition sent her parents into a tizzy. Though Angie had worked hard to block out most of her childhood memories, she still shuddered at the memory of the morning her mother screamed in terror after finding Amelia unresponsive in her crib. Angie watched from the hallway, terrified into silence. Her father tried to revive her blue, unmoving sister on the floor of the bedroom, but all his efforts failed. Things had changed dramatically in the Langford house after the day Amelia died. SIDS is what she kept hearing family members whisper. It wasn't until she was in high school she figured out what the acronym meant, Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. The loud and extravagant parties her mother meticulously planned, the guest list, the veritable who's who of the society circles Dr. Jerome and Annette Langford traveled in, stopped. Angie's mother, once a vibrant woman with enough energy to rival a teenager, sank into a deep depression that no amount of affection or cuddles from Angie could bring her out of. Even her mother's sister, Aunt Miriam, couldn't reach her. Angie's father became a distant recluse. When he was home, which wasn't often, he spent most of his time in his study. Angie stopped inviting friends over after school and on weekends. She didn't want others to see how her family had changed or the perpetual mess inside the house. Angie tried to keep up the housework, but she was too young. Cleaning nearly a 5,000-square-foot house by herself was next to impossible. For the first 7 years after Amelia's death, Angie watched her mother shuffle through the days in a haze, rarely venturing out of the house. Angie spent a lot of time at her aunt's house and grew extremely close to her cousin Kevin. Instead of taking the yearly excursions to distant locales with her parents, Angie went on vacations with her aunt, uncle, and cousin. During her medical training in college, when they covered psychological disorders, Angie discovered her mother was bipolar. Not only did her mother display all the symptoms, but when Angie looked up the numerous medications she was prescribed, it was a dead giveaway. On one level, It made complete sense, and Angie's childhood anger at her mother disappeared. Guilt for all the years she'd resented her mom for not being there for her other child made Angie's head swim. Worry about her own mental state crept in. The fear of the possibility she would turn out just the same wedged under Angie's skin like a leech. The death of Amelia caused a huge rift in the family. Though her mother remained close to Aunt Miriam, her husband, Dr. Clifford Stevens, became distant. Wouldn't attend family get-togethers or even come for a visit. Angie never knew why and was too scared to ever ask when she was little. By the time she was mentally ready to broach the subject with him, Uncle Cliff had passed away from kidney disease. When little, Angie had no idea what changed her mother's demeanor, since she never actually witnessed her mom pop a pill or swallow a drink, but the effects were enough. Twice, when her father tried to clean out Amelia's room, her mother's response had been violent and extremely aggressive. Angie wasn't sure exactly what happened. Since both times frightened her so much, she ran and hid in the closet. While she cowered inside the dark space, Angie heard glass breaking and her mother shrieking, followed by ugly words hurled between her parents. Then, the next day, her mom was gone. Her father's only explanation given in a quiet, distant voice at the breakfast table.
"Your mom is at the hospital getting better. She'll be home soon."
Angie's father dealt with the loss in his own way. He went from a social, smiling man, one who loved to have Angie sit on his lap as he read her bedtime stories, to a silent figure wandering through the house. A typical man, he dove headfirst into work, sometimes staying at the hospital for days on end. With her parents grieving in their own ways, it left Angie alone to try to come to grips with what had happened. Her friends gave up on trying to cajole her into playing or attend sleepovers. Though she grew very close to Kevin, he was a child as well, 2 years younger than Angie, so talking to him about how she felt was impossible. She was fortunate a counselor at school was kind enough to take her under her wing. Hours were spent inside the office of Rosalind Pritchard. Though the counselor tried, Angie refused to dump all her thoughts and feelings regarding the death of her sister. Miss Pritchard tried a different tactic, focusing her probing questions on Angie's sudden change in the friend department. Wanted to know why Angie stopped attending gymnastics. Did she need a ride to practice? Had someone said something ugly to her about her sister? The sentence Angie remembered hearing the most was, "What may I do to help you overcome this, Angie?" Angie's answer was always the same, a shrug of her thin shoulders. Even though Angie had the outlet, if she were to be completely honest, she hadn't really dealt with the life-altering event either. Amelia came along when Angie was 7. Angie thought the little bundle of wiggly arms and legs, one who smelled like baby powder and diaper cream, was a living version of one of her dolls. As she aged and Angie understood just what exactly had happened to her family, she was petrified of having children. The fear of dealing with such intense emotions also drove her away from making strong connections with others. Oh, she had friends, just not close friends. Keeping people at arm's length, never allowing the friendship to move past the acquaintance stage, was much easier, less painful. She shoved the memories, the pain of that horrible day, deep inside her soul. So far, in fact, by the time Angie was in her 20s, only gray undertones remained. Like looking at old grainy photographs from the past, unsure if the image was even real or not. It was someone else's tragedy, not hers. The thought of suffering so much grief overshadowed Angie's desires to be a mom, so she concentrated on high school, college, and then working at the hospital. Her father had been beyond irritated that Angie didn't continue on in school to become a doctor, but she had no interest. To her, doctors weren't the real caregivers. They just came in, poked and prodded on the patient, ordered tests if necessary, cut out diseased body parts, and then left the real work to the nurses. Angie realized during high school where her skill set rested, caring for those who couldn't care for themselves. When Angie announced the pregnancy, her parents insisted she undergo an amniocentesis to ensure the child was healthy. Angie and Drake refused,
The procedure was risky and could potentially cause more harm than good. Drake agreed with her and they stood firm on their stance. It was the first time in Angie's life she'd ever defied a direct order from her parents. The truth of the matter was, at least for her, she didn't want to know. If something, heaven forbid, was wrong with their child, they'd deal with it once he or she was born. Besides, Angie's love wouldn't change or be stipulated on anything. A baby was a baby, and she already loved her little bun in the oven. Nothing would change that. Her pink and blue fluffy slippers didn't make a sound as Angie crossed the hardwood floors. They were another thing she knew Drake hated, but she couldn't help herself. They were adorable. A gift from her mother from one of the numerous baby showers she'd been thrown during the past 2 months. Since Angie and Drake both wanted to be surprised in the delivery room as to their child's sex, the slippers were a gag gift. Her mother told her, "I'm covering both bases here. So long as the little bundle is healthy, that's what counts." Once in the kitchen, Angie set about fixing breakfast. She stared at her choices in the fridge, waiting to see if her tastes were the same. Nope, it would be yogurt, oat bran, and blueberries. Anything else would come right back up. She rummaged around in the fridge, but the yogurt container was empty and there were only 2 blueberries left. "Great, just great," Angie muttered. "Fantastic, barely enough milk for a bowl of oats." She snatched the milk container and poured the remaining dribbles over her cereal. "Hey, babe, we need some groceries before the storm hits." Angie waited for a response but heard nothing. Drake was either still on the phone or in the shower. She was so glad he owned his practice and had the flexibility to work from home. If the weather reports were correct, it was needed. Supposedly, a wicked storm was on its way, and the forecast was calling for at least a foot of snow. While watching the news earlier, Drake smiled when the screen displayed all Pulaski County offices, including the courts, were closed. Before grabbing her bowl, Angie moved over to the side cabinet to get the prenatal vitamins. She grimaced while picking up the bottle. It was empty, which was odd. "Didn't I just have them refilled last week?" Angie let out a huff of air, irritated at the frequent lapses in memory. With a snowstorm on the way, it was not a good time to have memory breakdowns. Angie scooped up her breakfast and headed to the dining room table, watching through the kitchen window as the ugly storm clouds twisted and churned. She nearly jumped out of the chair when Drake's lips tickled the back of her neck. "Were you yelling something earlier, or was I hearing things while in the shower?"
"Drake, you scared the shit out of me!"
Drake planted another kiss on Angie's neck, then walked into the kitchen. "Sorry. Want me to start wearing bells or something?" "You're too jumpy. Must be another side effect of pregnancy brain." Angie let Drake's dig pass without commenting.
"Yes, I did say something. We're out of several things, including yogurt and my vitamins. I swear I just went shopping earlier this week."
Drake returned to the table with 2 steaming cups of coffee and sat down. He patted Angie's back reassuringly and handed her a cup. "Honey, that was 2 weeks ago, remember? Right before you started bleeding? You haven't been anywhere since you came back from the hospital." Frustrated with her lapses of time, Angie scowled.
"Decaf?"
Drake nodded. Angie smiled and took a sip.
"Thanks, babe. See? I even forgot to fix myself a cup of coffee. Can't wait for our little one to arrive so my mind will reset. Between the vivid dreams at night and the loss of time, I'm a wreck. What if I'm like this when..."
"Babe, stop it. You and your brain are fine. This is only temporary. You're a nurse. You know that."
Drake stood and kissed the top of Angie's head.
"I've got some motions I need to complete before it starts snowing. Shouldn't take too long. So why don't you make a list of what we need at the grocery store and I'll go when I'm finished, okay?"
Angie sighed and looked up into the beautiful green eyes of her husband. God, how she loved Drake. He was a good man, extremely intelligent, an amazing attorney who represented his clients with fierce intensity. Drake knew how to make Angie laugh, ease her fears, and was a fantastic lover. He was the only person she'd ever met who made her mental shields, ones erected when Amelia died, crumble to the ground. Drake was the first real connection she had with another person since Kevin.
Angie pushed aside the guilt inside her chest for the lack of intimate contact between them for the last 2 weeks. She would change that later. While Drake was at the store, she'd start a fire, then fix a nice dinner, something other than her standard fare. They'd eat in the living room, watch the snowfall, make love on the couch, or maybe have Drake set out pillows and blankets from the spare bedroom on the floor in front of the fireplace. Okay, babe, good idea. Now, hopefully I'll remember what we're out of.
What's the number two rule of pregnancy brain? Drake teased.
Angie rolled her eyes. Take notes.
Exactly. Now, let me go work on the pleadings. Shouldn't take too long. Love you, sugar.
Angie blew an air kiss.
Love you.
She watched Drake saunter down the hallway toward his study, enjoying the view. His physique was still a sight to behold, his butt firm and tight, nestled inside a pair of jeans that fit just right. She couldn't wait to grab it later. Looking down at the bowl, Angie's stomach rolled and her appetite disappeared. Sipping the rest of the coffee, she hoped it would settle her stomach, but it didn't. She cleared the dishes, rummaged around in the drawer until she found pen and paper, and went from cabinet to cabinet, writing down things they needed. Angie scowled. It seemed like everything. Poor Drake would have a full cart when he finished shopping.
Chapter 4. Life Changes.
I don't care what he said, or why he thinks this is acceptable. It's not. Period. Not only is it morally reprehensible, it's illegal. I know you are under a lot of pressure, Mrs. Williamson, but please, stop listening to your husband, your friends, or anyone else except me. I'm your lawyer, and you hired me to represent you and your best interests, remember? It's my job to worry about these things, not yours. So please, don't sign anything he presents to you. And for God's sake, quit talking to him.
Yes, yes, I know. Please, don't cry. I have the motion for contempt right here, ready to file upon your approval. No, I'll file it electronically. Once the judge sees it, I can assure you, Mr. Williamson will not be selling anything. Your home is safe.
Yes, you too. Stay safe in the storm.
Drake disconnected the call and stared out the window. He sighed when he noticed large flakes of snow falling from the gray skies. He had to hurry to file the motion and get to the store. He'd wasted nearly an hour by talking to the distraught Mrs. Williamson. Her 30-year marriage was in shambles, destroyed after she'd discovered her spouse's predilection for pornography and her obsession with credit cards. Her soon-to-be ex had been hounding her for the last 2 days through text and phone calls, insisting if she was adamant about alimony, he'd be forced to sell their residence. The poor woman was beside herself when she called, rambling incoherently for the first 10 minutes. He logged on to the e-file portal and uploaded the motion. Once finished, Drake prepped and digitally signed an order for the judge and faxed it over. Though the court was closed due to the weather, it was sent, and the judge would be notified it awaited his ruling once he returned to his office. Glancing at his watch, Drake was surprised to see it was after 3 p.m. He'd been in his office for hours and wondered why Angie hadn't stopped in to check on him. Shutting his computer down, Drake rose and left his study to get dressed for a trip to the store.
Angie? Babe, why did you let me work so?
He let his words trail off when he found Angie asleep on the couch, shopping list on her very pregnant stomach. Drake crept across the hardwood floor and gently picked up the list. Angie looked like a little girl, her beautiful hair piled on her head, her face a sea of calm. Drake left the room and headed to the bedroom to put on some warm clothes. He stopped in the kitchen and stared out the sliding glass door, admiring their backyard. The falling snow was heavier than before, and at least 5 inches covered the ground and trees. The forecast earlier mentioned they could receive anywhere from 2 inches to a foot, depending on how the system rolled in. Judging by the near whiteout, Drake guessed the totals would hover near the foot mark. Once in the bedroom, he turned on the television to the local news while he dressed. The temperature was below freezing, and the forecast had changed. All the counties in the central part of the state were under a winter storm warning, and the snowfall totals increased.
Shit, that means another lost day at work tomorrow, maybe even the day after.
Drake muttered as he pulled the sweater over his head.
I hate winter. Well, not really. It does have its perks.
Dressed in layers, Drake shut the TV off and grabbed his cell and keys from the hutch. Even though his car was in the garage, it would be cold, so he walked down the back hallway toward the garage to start it up. When he reached the door, his cell phone rang. Drake grimaced when he saw the call was from his mother-in-law. The woman was beyond irritating. Textbook mother-in-law. The kind off-colored jokes were made about, the ones husbands told each other when out of earshot of their pampered wives. Annette Langford was nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. Certifiable, actually, for, according to Angie, Annette Langford had been in and out of mental hospitals for years. A confirmed whack job and a snob to boot. During the first few years of marriage to Angie, Drake secretly worried that Annette's mental issues might be hereditary. He watched Angie like a hawk, mentally cataloging any strange activity. Other than being sort of scatterbrained, his wife didn't exhibit any other symptoms, so Drake quit worrying. Until Angie told him she was pregnant. The lapses in memory, loss of time, the forgetfulness, worried Drake. When Angie slept at night, he spent a lot of time in his den, reading every article, blog post, paper, and anything he could get his hands on that dealt with mental issues during pregnancy. His research concluded it was fairly common for the first pregnancy to wreak havoc on a woman. Something about all the hormones, the worry, lack of sleep. So Drake dismissed his old fears and concentrated on his work. His mother-in-law was a different story. Annette lived and breathed for sticking her nose in the middle of their relationship, and Drake hated her coddling ways. There was an air of superiority about her that made Drake want to scream. On more than one occasion, he'd overheard her mention in passing to Angie her concerns about marrying a shyster lawyer, rather than a stable doctor like she had. Drake knew the old biddy thought her daughter married beneath her status, which royally pissed him off. He made damn good money, and they lived in a fine house in an exclusive neighborhood. Of course, it was a new neighborhood outside the city limits, each home situated on 3 acres of land. When his in-laws stopped by for their housewarming party, Annette moaned and complained about living in the sticks and not in an established neighborhood. He wanted to wrap his fingers around her scrawny neck when the old bitch actually admonished Drake in front of his guests for making his wife drive so far to work each day. He had a BMW, and Angie drove a fully loaded Tahoe for fuck's sake. What really irked him was Dr. and Mrs. Langford sought out his services for creating their wills and trusts, which is how he met Angie. He was good enough to handle their wealth, but not good enough for their daughter? The woman's priorities were beyond fucked up. She doted on Angie like she was still a small child. The minute she found out Angie was pregnant, Annette Langford's maternal instincts soared into the stratosphere. Her 4-day stay at the house while Angie recuperated from her little bleeding problem damn near drove him insane. When she finally left, after assurances from Angie she was fine, Drake wanted to jump up and down for joy. At least it was a reprieve from her presence before the baby arrived. He groaned inwardly at the thought of what life would be like once the baby did come. At least Annette's other half was a cold, stoic prick who stayed away. Hell, Drake couldn't blame him. If Annette was his wife, he'd be just like him. A crotchety grump who preferred to be at work rather than at home. Hi, Mrs. Langford.
Drake! Oh, thank goodness! Is Angie okay? I've tried calling her twice, but she isn't answering.
He stifled a groan of irritation and forced his voice to remain neutral. Yes, ma'am. She's asleep on the couch, and I didn't hear her phone, so it must be muted.
Asleep? At this time of day? She must not be feeling well. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have left her alone. It's too soon.
Annette's words struck Drake's nerves like fingernails down a chalkboard. What, was he invisible now? He wanted to shout into the phone, tell her to get a fucking life, and that Angie wasn't alone. Her husband was in the house, and he was more than capable of taking care of her if needed. Instead, Drake replied, "She's fine, Mrs. Langford.
snuggled up under a blanket by the warm fire on a cold winter day, which would make anybody drowsy. His phone beeped with another call, and it couldn't have arrived at a better time. "Listen, I need to take this call. When Angie wakes up, I'll make sure she gets back with you. Duty calls." Drake didn't wait for a response. Clicking over to the other call, he had to hold the phone away from his ear. Mrs. Williamson's voice was loud and in high gear. Drake shifted directions and headed back to the study, knowing the call would generate copious notes. Great. Back-to-back calls from obnoxious, demanding females. My lucky day. Drake? He shot up out of his chair, the notes from his conversation with Mrs. Williamson fluttering to the floor. Angie yelled, which she rarely did, and Drake sensed the fear in her voice. Racing down the hall, he slid to a stop when he saw her leaning against the counter, her face pale and hands clutching her stomach. Dark red blood stained the tile where Angie stood, mixed with a milky-looking fluid. "Oh, God! What's wrong, honey?" Angie looked up at him, her enormous blue eyes wild with fright and pain. "Contractions. Not the Braxton Hicks kind, either. They woke me up, and by the time I made it here, I lost the plug and my water broke. Oh, Jesus!" Angie screamed, doubling over. In a flash, Drake was by her side. Through clenched teeth, Angie mumbled, "Need to get to the hospital, now! Call an ambulance!" Adrenaline in high gear, Drake took her arms and led her to the closest kitchen chair. He glanced out the window, then down at his watch. It was after 5, and at least a foot of snow covered the ground. Drake went into action. "In this weather? There's no telling how long it will be before one can get here, if there are even any available. Hang on, I'll go get your bag and jacket. I'm taking you." "No, ow! Whatever, just hurry!" Angie yelled, followed by the breathing exercises they'd practiced for months. "He, he, hoo, hoo." Drake ran to the bedroom, yanked the pre-packed suitcase from the closet, along with Angie's parka and boots, and sprinted back to the kitchen. Angie was trying to make a phone call, but her hands were shaking so hard she couldn't. Drake grabbed Angie's phone, tossed it into her purse on the table, and bent down to put her boots on. "Were you calling the doctor?" Angie nodded as another wave of pain rendered her mute. "Don't worry, baby. I'll call Dr. Randolph as soon as we get on the road. Here, sit up for a second and let me get you wrapped up." In minutes, Angie's fingers digging into Drake's arms as he led her to the car, he had her situated in the passenger seat and strapped in. In his frenzy to leave, Drake almost forgot to raise the garage door and nearly backed into it. Once out on the roads, his knuckles turned as white as the snow from gripping the steering wheel. The roads were covered, but thankfully it was only snow, no ice. Drake's treasured BMW, with its fancy traction control, trudged through the roads as snow pelted the windshield.
"Oh, Drake, this isn't good. It's too early. The baby can't come yet."
Without taking his eyes off the white road, Drake tried to reassure Angie by keeping his voice calm, soothing.
"We'll be there in no time, honey. Just concentrate on breathing. Don't push, no matter how much you want to. Dr. Randolph will know what to do and how to stop the progression."
"Not if he isn't there. Call him now. I don't want some other doctor. I want Dr. Randolph."
Drake glanced around, cursing under his breath when he realized he forgot his cell. Pregnancy brain must be contagious. He pushed the button on the steering wheel to make a call from the car, but nothing happened. Perfect. Angie's purse was behind her seat, and they were on a straight stretch of road, so Drake eased his right arm behind her and fumbled around until he felt the straps. Yanking it forward, he set it on the console between them, shoving his hand inside until he felt the right shape.
"What are you doing, Drake?" Angie grumbled.
"He, hoo, hoo. Just breathe, honey. I'm calling Dr. Randolph. Left my phone at home."
"Can't you just call from the car? He, hoo, hoo.
Nerves on edge, Drake snapped back.
"Don't you think I tried already? It's not working."
Immediately, feeling like an ass, he added,
Sorry, babe. I'm nervous, too. Don't worry, I'll... Oh, shit!
The back end slid just enough to cause Drake to drop the cell and grip the wheel with both hands. They were on the curvy stretch of the road leading out of their subdivision, but thankfully no other vehicles were out. Angie's phone bounced off the console and landed at her feet. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Be careful, Drake, please, Angie whimpered from the seat.
I knew we should have called an ambulance.
Angie, it's okay. Just reach down and hand me your phone. It's right next to your left foot.
Bend down? Says the man to the pregnant woman who's in labor.
Yeah, right.
Dr. Randolph, remember?
Drake urged.
Fine, Angie muttered, trying to bend far enough to touch the floor. Groaning, she unlatched her seatbelt and tried again. There, see, you got it.
Oh, God!
The car spun out of control as Drake hit a patch of slick road. He tried to remember all the proper steps for controlling a vehicle on ice. He took his foot off the gas and didn't overcorrect the wheel. Angie was screaming, her wails so loud his ears hurt. Inside a storm of white, it all happened so fast. The last thing Drake saw was a small grove of trees in front of the car, and he was helpless to change their trajectory. Panic set in, and instead of hitting the brakes, he tromped on the gas for a split second. Realizing his mistake, Drake slammed on the brakes, but it was too late.
Light is back, distant but there. It ebbs and flows like the tides of the ocean.
What? What did you say?
It sounded like Angie.
Speak louder.
What does that mean?
Is Angie my name?
I don't know. Can't recall.
Somehow, for some strange reason, it seems right.
Familiar.
So I'm female.
Are you here to rescue me?
Is your voice a cord? A link to pull me free?
Oh, please, please let it be.
What?
I can't understand you. Your voice is all wrong. The words are jumbled.
Come back? Come back to me, Angie? Are those the words?
Yes. Yes, they are.
I'm trying, but I don't know how.
Can't you just come whisk me to safety?
Wait, who are you?
Oh, I don't care. Just keep talking. It makes the light brighter. I don't know if I'm moving closer to it or it is coming toward me, but it isn't as far away as before.
Ouch, that hurts.
Oh, God, I feel pain. Glorious pain. If I'm dead, I wouldn't be able to, right?
The burn, the sting.
Do it again. It brings bursts of colors. Reds, blues, greens. Chases the drab hues away.
Where did you go?
Are you still there?
I can't see you.
Don't hear your voice.
Please, please, I'm begging you.
Don't leave me here all alone.
I'm scared. Terrified of the dark. The bone-chilling quiet. So cold. So fucking cold.
You're back.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, I'm finally warm.
Yes, that feels good. Makes the pressure in my head lessen.
I hear you, but I can't see your face.
Squeeze. Is that what you said? Squeeze your hand?
Yes, you did, but damn it, I can't. My limbs, I don't feel them. The only thing I feel is my head and my...
Oh, my God! My stomach!
What are you doing?
Stop! For the love of all that's holy, stop! You'll hurt my...
Dear God.
My baby.
I'm pregnant.
I can't feel any movement.
Please fucking talk to me.
What's wrong with my child?
No, it's not going to be all right.
Gone?
Too late? Brain damaged?
No, I won't accept that.
Get away from me.
A girl?
Please leave her alone. Let her stay with me. I need her.
Drake. I need Drake.
God, please, where is my husband?
Why isn't he here, fighting for our child?
For me. For us. Mom? Somebody. Help me. They're going to take my baby from me.
It's all over now. I realize that.
too late to bring her back to me. You sick, sadistic fucker. Yanked your own flesh and blood from my womb where she was safe, loved and warm. Yes, I hear you. It's all for the best, Angie. She wasn't right in the head. If I could, I'd rip you apart with my bare hands. Don't you touch me, or try to comfort me in any way. Wow, what an act you have down. But everyone feels sorry for you. Have they offered words of encouragement to soothe your wounded heart? Do you smile and force fake crocodile tears as they pat your back, give you a shoulder to cry on? I remember everything. The setup, the lies, the wicked, wicked deceit. I remember everything. Chapter 5. Painful Truths. Jerome released the cold, clammy hand of his precious daughter. He stood and stretched his lower back, stiff from sitting in the chair next to Angie for over an hour. Gazing out the window, desperate to look at anything other than the destroyed face of his once beautiful child, Jerome watched the water drip from the roof. The snow that blew in and caused so much destruction was gone, vanquished by the earlier warm rays of the afternoon sun. In less than 20 minutes, the sun would be gone and the cold would once again make his hands throb when he left to go home. Only a few sporadic patches remained in the hospital parking lot, where the maintenance staff had pushed it around in piles as they cleared the asphalt. He looked down at his gnarled hands, the ones he used to perform surgery. Rheumatoid arthritis set in 5 years earlier, and though medication eased the pain at times, it did nothing to stop the progression of the disease. Once strong and steady, capable of controlling the intricate, delicate surgical instruments, they'd failed him. Jerome could barely make a fist and hold it long enough to brush his teeth. At 68, Jerome should be enjoying retirement instead of trying to continue practicing medicine, but he refused to walk away. It would be like admitting defeat, letting his body win. So he gave up his surgical practice and transitioned to general family practitioner. Anger spread across Jerome's chest for thinking about his own petty issues, while Angie was less than 3 feet away, unconscious. He shook off his previous thoughts and bent down to examine the bandages on her face. Thankfully, they were fine. No signs of infection, the stitches expertly done. He peered closer at her shoulder and chest, wincing at the deep, ugly bruises. Angie's right shoulder took the majority of the impact as her body was ejected from the car. She was lucky her collarbone was only bruised, not broken. Had she gone headfirst through the windshield? No, Jerome wouldn't think about that. He took comfort in the fact Angie wasn't on a respirator and was breathing on her own. What injuries she'd sustained were bad enough. Damn you, Drake Benson. Damn you to hell. Scanning the monitors, keeping tabs on Angie's vitals, Jerome let out a long huff of air. She was stable, and though still in a coma, should awaken soon. Dr. Packard told him earlier the brain scan showed no signs of severe trauma, no broken cranial bones, full brain activity. Though he didn't want to, Jerome forced himself to look at her abdomen. The sheet covering Angie's torso lay almost flat against her body. Though he would never, ever admit it out loud, because it went against his scientific mindset, the father in him wondered if the reason Angie was still unconscious was because of the loss. Was her mind aware she'd lost the fetus? Did it decide to remain gridlocked until her body healed before allowing reality to settle back in? Poor Angie. Stubborn, insistent, persistent Angie. He'd warned her of the risks. Told his headstrong daughter the dangers of carrying a child in women over 35, how they were more susceptible to complications during pregnancy, and Angie was even at greater risk because of their family's history. Angie just rolled her eyes, laughed it off, told Jerome he was a worrywart and everything would be fine. Assured both he and Annette she was taking good care of herself, eating right, exercising, self-monitoring her blood pressure, heart rate, and vigilant about keeping in constant contact with the obstetrician. Jerome's heart rate increased as he remembered their last argument about the subject. It happened in the parking lot of the hospital before Angie began her shift several weeks ago.
He thought if he approached her from a clinical standpoint, minus the emotional intrusion and tear-filled pleas of her mother, Angie would listen to him. He was mistaken. Angie lit into him, told him it was her decision to make, not his, and to drop the subject. At times, not only did Angie look just like her mother, she acted like her as well. The thought made Jerome's stomach clench. Sighing inside the confines of her room, for a moment, Jerome wished he would have yelled right back, insisting Angie listen to him. However, raw displays of emotions were not part of his psyche. Never had been. Jerome was a critical thinker. Looked at life through a black-and-white camera, not a full-colored lens. Had he succeeded in letting some emotion out, Angie would have taken the test. Though the results would have been difficult to grapple with at first, the right choice would have been made. The pregnancy terminated, and the chain of events leading up to where Angie rested now never would have occurred. Drake, the perfectionist who had to have the best of everything, no exceptions, would have come over to Jerome's side and convinced Angie terminating the pregnancy was the best for everyone. Yes, he shouldered part of the blame for the predicament Angie was in. Had he released a modicum of emotion, Jerome wouldn't be staring at his battered and bruised child, his sweet Angie, clinging to life and lost inside her mind. The memory of Drake's grief-stricken face as he signed the consent papers, not to resuscitate the fetus, would never have been embedded in Jerome's memory banks. Yet another disturbing recollection Jerome would need to learn to live with, along with a multitude of others. If Jerome could have shed even one tear, he wouldn't be hiding out in his daughter's hospital room, dreading going home to an empty house. Annette had fallen apart, which left Jerome with no choice. He'd been forced to call his sister-in-law for help. Thankfully, Miriam stepped up to the plate, took her hysterical sister in, comforted Annette while Jerome remained at the hospital by his only child's side. Jerome stifled a sigh as he thought about Annette. She had always been a fragile, emotionally driven woman. Her vivaciousness and love of life had drawn Jerome to her in the beginning when they met. Her zest for life, her effervescent personality, those beautiful green eyes, a scatterbrain. That's what Annette's own mother called her, and Jerome initially thought her inability to focus on one thing for more than a few minutes was adorable. Then, things changed after Angie arrived. He chalked up her issues to a bout with the baby blues, short episodes that would pass once her hormones regulated themselves. At the time, he had not recognized her mood swings were a sign of troubling times in the future. Jerome and Annette were the epitome of the expression, opposites attract. But when Amelia died, so did the woman Jerome married. Annette retreated inside her mind, dulling the pain with drugs and alcohol. He'd been unable to offer comfort, to give Annette an outlet to help deal with the loss. When three separate doctors diagnosed Annette as a manic depressive, Jerome refused to accept their conclusions. Annette wasn't crazy, just grieving. Even Miriam, Annette's beloved sister, had been unable to reach her. Years of expensive therapy, drugs, and rehab clinics didn't work. Annette finally climbed out of her troubled mind when Angie married. Annette's vibrant spark reappeared, and for the last several years, they weren't exactly happy, but content. All that changed the day Angie announced her pregnancy. Annette went from being a carefree, flighty companion to a distraught, constantly paranoid woman. News of her impending status as a grandmother brought memories of Amelia to the surface, and it set Annette's recovery back years. What little sanity she had left disappeared like the snowflakes from 2 days ago, when they received the call about the accident. Upon arrival at the hospital, Annette's touch with reality was severed. Jerome feared it was a permanent break. Though she hadn't displayed violent tendencies in years, her mind break caused her to lash out at Drake. Annette's outburst warranted banishment from the hospital, not even able to be at her daughter's bedside. Jerome had given Miriam medication to keep Annette sedated, at least until Angie recovered. He jerked a fraction at the vibration of his cell phone in his pocket. He wouldn't look to see who it was. He already knew.
Annette had tried calling him 4 times prior from Miriam's house. He hadn't answered any of the calls and wasn't about to change that now. Truth was, he couldn't deal with Annette's drama. Let her sister handle the bouts of crying, wailing, and general gnashing of teeth. Angie needed at least one parent who was calm. As always, it would be him. Instead of answering, Jerome let his thoughts wander over to Drake. He'd never liked his son-in-law before, and after the events of the past 2 days, Jerome despised him. Wanted to see him suffer, which went against everything Jerome stood for as a doctor. Drake Benson was a pompous blowhard, thinking he was better than anyone else. Determined he could handle things better than trained professionals, Drake's bravado destroyed Angie's world, nearly killed her. Had she died, Jerome already knew in his heart what he would have done. An eye for an eye, loss for a loss. Though he didn't agree with Annette's ridiculous outburst in front of others, he did concur with her words. It was all Drake's fault, and when Angie woke up, he and his wife would work in tandem to convince Angie to divorce the idiotic scum. If, that was, Annette recovered from her own issues. If she didn't, Jerome wondered if he could convince Angie divorcing Drake was for the best on his own. Jerome's thoughts about wrapping his swollen fingers around the neck of his son-in-law were interrupted when the door opened. He stiffened as Drake rolled in, his face pale, a small bandage covering his nose, his lower leg encased in plaster. They never exchanged words as they switched positions in silence. Jerome walked to the door, then took one final glance behind him. Drake sat next to Angie, his fingers caressing her cheek as he whispered in her ear. The image made Jerome sick to his stomach, so he left the room.
"What's that sound? It's so familiar. The high-pitched wails. Oh, God, it's a baby. Keep crying, little one. Yes, that's it. Louder. I'm following. I'm coming. Your voice lets the light in. I see now. My baby girl. Wait, the voice is wrong. You're not my daughter. Dear God, I can see. Bright, blessed colors. I recognize this place. The pink walls, the delicate scrolls on the wooden crib, the thick shag carpet and sheer white curtains I helped Mom make. There you are, Amelia. I see you and I know you. I remember. Your chubby cheeks, stained red from crying, little hands balled into tight fists. You're wearing my favorite onesie, the one Aunt Miriam made you, with a matching nightgown for me, the yellow one with blue and green turtles. Where's Mom? Dad? Can't they hear you? It's okay, I'm coming. I'll hold you, comfort you. I'm almost there. No, don't stop crying. The light is dimming. Wait, someone is coming. They'll take care of you, so please ask them to help me. I'm here, right here. Can't you see me? Help! What? What are you doing to Amelia? Don't hold her like that. She's fragile, just a baby. She's slow, that's what Mama says. Stop, put her down. Leave my baby sister alone. No, she can't breathe. You're smothering her. Mom, hurry, help Amelia. Oh, God, she's not breathing. She's all alone in her crib. Her cheeks and hands are grayish blue. Mama, I'm so sorry. I couldn't help her. Please, Mama, don't cry. You still have me. Can't you see me? Oh, God, the darkness is back. Wait, come help me. Don't let it return. This can't be happening. Oh, God, I was wrong. I don't want to remember what happened. It's too painful. I'll just slip back into the darkness, float away from the sorrow. Yes, float away to grieve no more. I hear you talking, whispering in my ear. Your voice makes me sick. Your words are vile and reprehensible. They also give me strength. Strength to return from the void, to make you accountable for what you've done. You were supposed to love me, to protect me from harm, be my rock. Instead, you are worse than a thief. You're a murderer, a cold-blooded killer, a maniac wrapped up in your own self-righteous world. Yes, I hear you. I may not be able to control my body, provide you with a response, but I hear you. I can't believe you just said that. How can you sleep at night? How can you live with what you've done? The decision was for the best for all parties involved? Are you kidding me? You pig. You dirty, filthy swine. Don't you realize how many hearts you've broken? How many lives your actions ruined? Oh, you're intelligent, so I'm sure you are aware of the damage you've caused. You simply don't care. Everything always has to revolve around you, doesn't it? One minute you tell me to leave, go on to the next realm, rest. The next, you want me to fight? Your whispered words encouraging me to be strong. You're either out of your mind or trying to drive me insane. It won't work. I feel now. Know who I am and where I am. Alive. Yes. Angela Renee Langford Benson is fucking alive. I'm aware of how I got here. My child. My precious child. She's gone. I know what was done to all of us. And believe me, justice is coming. Once I swim through the murky waters of my mind, my plan fully formed, payment will be harsh and swift. Keep talking. Your words have the opposite effect than what you intended. They are giving me nourishment, not making me weak. The light is brighter now, and my plan is almost complete. I'm almost ready to break free from this void, and when I do, I know exactly who I'm going to call for help to take you down. Mommy, I'm so sorry. I understand now why your mind snapped. The anguish is beyond suffering. On another realm, a higher plane than just grief. Life-altering, game-changing, anger-inducing, rage-fueling. Chapter 6. Reality. Angie burst through the murkiness of her shattered mind. Her eyes fluttered open, squinting at the intense light surrounding her. On instinct, she took in a huge breath, her body jerking with the effort. Pain ripped through her stomach and shoulder, causing her to gasp out loud. Okay, breathe. Just breathe. Slow your heart down. Deep, slow intakes of air. Don't hyperventilate. Think, Angie. Think. Glancing around at her surroundings, she realized she was in the hospital. Hooked up to an IV, a sore body swathed in a flimsy gown. Angie tried to sit up, but the movement made her dizzy. Reaching up with her hand, she touched her face, felt the bandages. Her hand flew to her belly. She whimpered in agony. Oh, God, it wasn't a dream. She's gone. My baby. Hot tears raced down Angie's face, and she let them come. Though in physical pain, it paled in comparison to the mental anguish. Images of the accident and the events before and after whizzed by in a gut-wrenching blur. The memories of the words spoken in her ear made the tears come faster. Everything was gone. Life as she knew it, over. Nothing would ever be the same. An entire life obliterated, the trajectory altered in seconds. No, stop it. You were simply dreaming. Your mind shut down after the accident. None of what you remember is true. It can't be. No one could be so evil. She tried to stay calm, to listen to the clinical side of her mind, but it wasn't working. The haunting words replayed over and over, so crisp, so clear. Remembering them replaced Angie's sorrow with red-hot fury. Taking a deep breath, she steadied her nerves for the test that would prove her mind was playing tricks, or what she recalled was the ugly, horrid truth. Raising her arm, Angie brought her elbow closer. Her heart sank. A small puncture wound with a slight bruise around the edges, right at the medial inner junction. You bastard. Seeing the undeniable evidence in front of her eyes
wiped away all traces of doubt. Angie closed her eyes, leaned back, and let the images and words play back in her mind. As she watched, each vision infused her with strength and a deep-seated rage. Everything about her former life was one gigantic lie. No court trial or prison sentence would rectify it or soothe the wounds inflicted on not only her, but her family. Period. The plan Angie envisioned while wandering inside the hallways of her mind came next. She went over every detail. It was bold, cutthroat, completely against the person she was. No, who I used to be. I am a product of someone else's creation now. Angie heard his voice on the other side of the door. Her devoted, beloved Drake was back, ready to play his new role of the sweet, caring husband, desperate for his poor wife to wake up. Grabbing the edge of the sheet, Angie wiped her tears away, moving back to her original position and held still. The monitors beeped in sync with her heartbeat, which had skyrocketed in time with her anger. In, out, slow and easy. That's it. Don't move an inch. Don't blink. In fact, don't listen. Just concentrate on the plan while he plays his games. She heard him come in the door. A strange whooshing sound followed. A wheelchair. In seconds, Drake was next to her, his warm fingers caressing her cheek before moving a strand of her hair from her face. His hot breath grazed her ear. Drake whispered words so vile, so sick and atrocious, it took all her concentration and intestinal fortitude to remain still. As words poured from his mouth, any doubts Angie had about her own evil plans disappeared. Unsure how long Drake remained by her side, Angie finally blocked out his words, her mind drifting over to the plan. When he left and the door closed, she wasted no time. He could return at any moment, so she had to hurry. Grabbing the phone from the small table, she dialed. Her chest pounded as each ring ticked precious seconds away. On the fourth ring, the wait ended. "Stevens Funeral Home, how may I assist you today?" "Kevin Stevens. Whom shall I say is calling?" "Lady, this is an emergency. Put me through now." "One moment, please." Angie fought through the pain in her body and mind. She listened to the soothing organ music, but it didn't help calm her nerves. The call would show up on the phone records of the hospital, but that part didn't bother her. After all, she was calling her family's funeral home. No one would bat an eye if her plans worked out. What made her nervous was the chance someone might walk into the room, find her awake before she was ready for anyone else to know she'd regained consciousness.
"Kevin Stevens?"
"Thank God he's at work. Kevin, it's Angie."
"Well, hearing your voice sure has made my day. So glad you're awake. Just sorry about the news. Don't worry, though, cuz. We'll get through all this."
Angie interrupted. "Listen, I don't have much time to talk. I need your help, and I mean right now. Just between the two of us, promise?"
"Sure, honey. I assume you want to discuss the services of..."
Angie cut him off. She stared at the door while she spoke in hushed tones, hoping her daily visitors were otherwise engaged. "Get down here as fast as you can. Wear scrubs. Bring a surgical coat and a disguise. Hide them in a bag or inside a bundle of flowers or something. You still have a lab coat from med school, right?"
"Yeah, I think so. In the back closet." "Angie, a disguise? I don't understand."
"No time for questions. I'll explain when you get here. It's a matter of life and death, and I'm not even kidding. Will you do that? For me? I need your help, Kevin." Kevin cleared his throat.
"If my cousin needs me, I'm there. Mum's the word. Be there in less than an hour."
"Thank you. Remember, tell no one. And I mean that, Kevin. Not a soul, got it?"
"Gotcha. Hey, you're awake, and that's all that matters. Love you."
"Love you too, Kevin. Hurry." Angie hung up the phone just in time. She heard footsteps coming down the hall, so she scooted back to her original position, closed her eyes, and prayed the right person was about to enter her room. It was her lucky day. Angie smelled his cologne from across the room. The musky aroma brought distant childhood memories to the surface. Keeping still, she listened for sounds of another person. Satisfied he was alone, Angie waited until he reached her bed and leaned down to kiss her before opening her eyes. "Daddy?" Angie whispered. All the color from Jerome's face disappeared, his mouth agape. He blinked several times, trying to regain his faculties.
"Oh, Angie, you're awake."
Angie motioned with her head for him to sit. Reaching out, she grabbed her father's trembling hand. "We need to talk, privately. Please lock the door. I don't want to be interrupted." Confusion spread across his face, but Jerome didn't ask any questions. He did as his daughter requested and returned to his previous spot. Ever the doctor, he pulled out his stethoscope to check Angie's vitals. Angie brushed his hand away and rubbed her flat stomach. "I'm fine, Dad. Well, as fine as a person can be who lost her child and nearly died." Jerome's eyes filled with tears as he watched.
"Oh, Angie, we've been so worried. Your mom, she's not taking this well. Had to sedate her after she found out. She's banned from returning to the hospital after she exploded and struck Drake. It's why she isn't here with you. Well, it's part of the reason. I'm afraid she's had a setback. A break, actually. But don't worry, she's with Aunt Miriam. Here," Jerome said, reaching into his pocket for his phone. "Let's call her. She'll be beyond relieved to hear your voice. It will bring her back, pull her out of her catatonia. Tell her you're awake, then I must insist on taking your vitals and calling Dr. Packard and Drake."
"Oh, Mommy, I'm so sorry. I'll be there soon. Take care of you, I promise."
"No, Dad, put your phone away. We have some things to talk about first. I'm not ready to let anyone know I'm awake. Water, please?"
"Angela Renee, your mother, your husband, they both need to know,"
Jerome muttered as he handed Angie a cup of water. Angie couldn't stop her voice from rising.
"I said no, Dad. I mean it. When the time comes, I certainly will. In fact, I'll give her a hug followed by high fives for slapping the shit out of Drake. But calling him or anyone else is out of the question."
"What in the world are you talking about?" Jerome asked.
Angie saw the wary look in his eyes. She doubted he even noticed he'd scooted back from her like she had awoken with a contagious disease or something. Angie took a sip of water before she responded.
"First things first, Dad. Where's my child? Still in the hospital morgue, or has her father already made arrangements for a funeral?"
"Honey, now is not the time to discuss such things."
"Wrong. Where is my child?"
Tears formed in Jerome's eyes, but he fought them back. He swallowed twice and cleared his throat, trying to remain calm.
"Drake thought it was best to not let you see her remains. She's already been cremated. Kevin was here yesterday, and he took her with him. Don't worry, she's with family. They took good care of her, promise."
Pain tore through Angie's mind, but she shoved it aside. At least her baby was with someone who loved her. "Any of the blood they drew from me left? It needs to be tested. Oh, wait, how long have I been here?"
"Honey, you aren't making much sense. Of course your blood was drawn, but I doubt any remains in the lab. Why are you so concerned about that?"
Angie sighed, rubbing her forehead. "How long have I been here?"
"A little over 48 hours,
Jerome answered. Angie stared at him, noting the facial expression full of concern.
"I need you to find out about the blood. If some remains, run a panel immediately. Check specifically for oxytocin. If they drew it when we first arrived, some traces might still remain."
"Angela, that's not..."
Angie's head throbbed as rage pumped through her system.
"Dad, this whole thing, it wasn't some tragic accident. It was all planned, put in motion by the snake I married. He wanted me and our child to die. For money. It was Drake's plan all along. The only reason he married me."
Aghast, Jerome blurted out.
"Why, that's just preposterous, Angela. I've seen him every day since he's been here. Watched him come in here and talk to you. Saw the utter despair on his face. The only reason he isn't here right now, by your side as he should be, is because his doctor insisted he rest his leg.
He's a broken man, and I don't mean just the bones in his body. His spirit is crushed. Though I'm angry with him for his stupidity in causing all this, I still see the sadness in his eyes. Angie lowered her voice.
He's lying, Dad, using his courtroom drama trickery. His voice somehow broke through my mind while I was out. I heard every word he said to me, and none of it was kind, or sympathetic, or full of sorrow or love. He kept urging me to go, join our child in death. Said each day I was alive was costing him in medical fees that would cut into the life insurance proceeds after I died. Tormented me by telling me everything he did to me. Jerome's voice changed from shock to relief.
Oh, honey, you were in a coma. Your mind was just playing tricks on you, that's all. Next you'll tell me you followed a bright light, visited heaven or some such nonsense. It's all natural, normal responses from a brain injury. You've been in a coma for nearly 2 days.
Really? Guess what, Dad? I was awake when he was in here earlier, though he didn't know it. The things you say I couldn't have heard when unconscious were repeated when I was. Want confirmation? Explain this, Angie said, raising her arm. Jerome peered closer as she pointed at the juncture of her elbow. Angie waited until his eyes widened for confirmation he'd seen it.
That needle mark is from Drake, injecting me with oxytocin after he laced my coffee with Benadryl.
Angela, what are you saying? Why would you think such a thing?
She leaned closer and whispered, I'm saying, Dad, my husband set me up to die. He didn't want a child, nor did he want to be married any longer. All he wanted was the money from my life insurance policy and the trust fund you set up for me.
Angie paused and let the little morsel to sink in.
Jerome blinked several times, trying to absorb the disgusting words.
Drake wasn't supposed to tell you about the trust fund until the baby arrived. He promised me.
But he did, Dad, while I was in this bed as he pressed me to give up and die. That's all he ever wanted. From the moment you and Mom hired him, he's been biding his time, letting the money accrue, knowing full well you add to it each year. Convinced me to put up the benefits in my life insurance policy because I was a high-risk pregnancy. He deliberately waited until the snowstorm to take me out. Drugged me, induced labor. I wanted to call an ambulance. He wouldn't let me. I remember it all, Dad. He dropped the phone on the floor of the car, made me get it. I took my seatbelt off and he gunned the engine. He didn't even try to miss the trees, headed straight for them. When I came to in the snow, I could hear him laughing inside the car. He kept saying, I've done it, it's finally over. The look behind her father's eyes switched from confusion and doubt over to belief and anger. Visibly shaking, his face blanched, and Angie wondered if he was about to pass out. Jerome shook his head.
No, I can't believe it. Drake loves you. Are you trying to tell me he waited 8 years? No. No way. Again, it's something your damaged mind created while your neurons misfired. Too much television, too many movies. Trauma to your body from the accident, the loss of the baby. Besides, how in the world could he have gotten his hands on oxytocin?
Dad, I know this is hard to believe. How do you think I feel? It's like I woke up in an alternate universe, one where my child is dead and my husband is a monster. Test my blood. I hoped we could get a tissue sample from the baby, but it's too late for that. However, there is another way to prove to you I'm not out of my mind. All you have to do is go to my house.
What? Why?
Angie couldn't stop a smile from appearing on her face. Drake laughed when he whispered in my ear how he ordered the drug from someplace overseas, how easy it was to buy, and how he nearly pissed himself when it arrived at the house because I was home and brought in the mail. Said his heart skipped a beat when he saw me set the package on the table, giggled while he remembered I never gave it a second glance. How ironic it was I held the means to kill me in my own hands, completely unaware of what was inside.
Surely you don't think it's still at the house, do you? I mean, if what you're saying is true, he's too smart not to get rid of the evidence. He's a lawyer, for heaven's sake.
I saw it, Dad. The empty package and the syringe, they were in the garbage in the kitchen. When I woke up on the couch, the pain was so intense, I thought I would vomit. I made it to the kitchen, yanked the lid off the can to throw up in, but the sensation passed. At the same time, I was in so much pain, then I lost the plug and my water broke. It didn't really register what I was looking at. Knew I was in labor and needed to get to the hospital. Drake's been here ever since, which means he hasn't been home to get rid of it. Jerome stood and paced back and forth in front of the bed. Beads of sweat formed on his brow, and he was chewing on his cheek, a habit he had when stressed. Glancing at the clock on the wall, Angie winced at the time. They needed to hurry. Daddy, I know this is a lot to take in, trust me, but I swear I'm telling you the truth. Just go. Check out my story. If I'm wrong and it's like you say, ramblings from my damaged brain, fine. We'll forget we ever had this discussion and chalk it up to a brain misfire. I promise you, though, I'm not making this up. I know what I heard. Know what I saw. Please, Daddy, go to my house. Bring back what you find. Jerome stopped pacing and looked at Angie, shocked to feel tears running down his cheeks.
She must have some residual brain damage. This just isn't possible.
I will. But only to prove to you you're wrong. You couldn't possibly have heard all those things, Angela. The brain is in hiatus while in a coma. If, and that's a big if, you're right, and by some weird, inexplicable way you did hear him, and I do find what you say I will, why in the world would you want me to bring it back? The next logical step would be to call the police, have Drake arrested.
It was the first time in Angie's life she'd ever seen him cry. She sat up, her voice low and deep. My husband's words were the only thing that brought me back, because when I heard them, I decided to make him pay. Please, Daddy, go and bring the items back. Then we'll discuss how Drake Benson needs to atone for nearly killing your child and killing mine. A long, drawn-out trial just isn't in the cards for him, I'm afraid. Code for the security system at the house is 4389. Remember, not a word to anyone I'm awake. Period. Angie watched anger blaze behind her father's eyes, and she knew the words chosen had been the right ones. Without responding, Jerome nodded and left the room, his back ramrod straight. Angie settled back to her original position in the bed, staring at the clock. Kevin would be by her side soon, her father not far behind. A lazy, wicked grin spread across her lips. Plan A initiated. Plan B in progress. Chapter 7. Connecting the Dots. Sounds of footsteps and voices pulled Angie from her thoughts. Glancing at the clock, she was shocked to discover she'd been wandering around inside the twisted halls of her mind for almost an hour. Fury burned through Angie's veins like venom with each new vivid memory. Pregnancy brain my ass. She'd spent the time alone reliving her entire marriage. Things she should have noticed, paid more attention to, instead of just pushing them aside. Even before her pregnancy, certain memories of what Angie had eventually chalked up to being overtired from work, or had too much to drink, or simply letting the stressors of life skew her thoughts, surfaced. How many times had Angie run out of gas, her wallet empty or missing, and been stuck in the worst part of downtown Little Rock? Whined to Drake on the phone, swearing she recalled filling up as she waited for someone from AAA to come to her aid, because he wasn't able to leave work? Or the last anniversary dinner shot to hell because she'd gone to the wrong restaurant? No, Angie, I said Zarino's, not Zach's place. Pay attention, will you? Zach's place was on the seedier side of town, and Drake was at Zarino's, fuming because Angie was at the wrong location and couldn't follow simple instructions. Their honeymoon. Drake insisted Angie stepped out of her comfort zone, conquer her fears of height, enjoy the adrenaline rush of bungee jumping. At the last moment, as the operator performed a final check on the equipment, noticed a tear in the cord. Drake laughed as he patted Angie's back, commenting over and over how lucky she was,
that the heavens must be watching, for had she jumped, she would have crashed into the jagged rocks. Drake flew into a screaming rage, threatening the poor Jamaican with a lawsuit for operating with subpar equipment. He held Angie close, murmuring his love and thankfulness she was still alive. The most recent had been the grocery store. Angie knew she'd gone shopping, refilled her prenatal vitamins, bought groceries. Each silly, petty mistake added up. Like connecting separate mismatched swatches of material to a quilt, and when completed, the final product came into full view. He'd set her up, hoping she'd become just another crime statistic. Simple miscommunication, a small fib here and there, the look of doubt on his face when she bemoaned recalling things different from his version. All done for money. Stupid, stupid mistakes. She'd been blinded by Drake's charm, his wit, his proclamations of undying love. Drawn to his laughter, the way his nose crinkled when he smiled. Pulled into the sadness behind his eyes when he spoke about the loneliness of being an orphan, raised by strangers, bouncing from one foster home to another. Drank in his strength at never giving up on life, pushing himself toward success, despite the seemingly insurmountable odds life had stacked in his path. He was a lone wolf, jittery and edgy when she met him, and she sensed an air of vulnerability beneath the bravado. Like a magnet, his life force overpowered her own mental shields, and she fell head over heels in love with a monster. One she'd cuddled up to every night for almost 10 years. Unbelievable. She wouldn't cry for the losses, at least not yet. When everything was finished and her revenge obtained, she would grieve, hard, release the pain and sorrow embedded inside every fiber of her being, let her emotions run free, take over her mind, heart, and soul as she mourned, just like Mom did. Oh, Mom, I'm a member of your club now, though I certainly never thought I would be. I'll make this right. Forgive me for what I'm about to do. The door opened, so she took a deep breath and closed her eyes. She could tell her visitor wasn't Drake because she didn't hear the sound of his wheelchair or labored breathing. It wasn't her father either, judging from the absence of his telltale cologne. "Angie?" came the quiet whisper of the man she'd been waiting for. Turning her head, but with her eyes still closed, she tested the waters. "Kevin?" Kevin's warm fingers wrapped around Angie's. "Honey, you awake?" Angie felt the weight of Kevin's body as he sat on the edge of the bed. She squeezed his hand with all her strength, giving it a nudge for him to move closer. "Alone?" "Yes." Angie released Kevin's hand and sat up. Scanning the room and seeing no one, she motioned for him to come closer. He did, and they hugged. When he pulled away, she noticed he was wearing his scrubs and lab coat. His big brown eyes were full of worry, his brow furrowed.
"Okay, cuz, what's going on?"
"We don't have much time, so you need to listen and remember everything I say. You once promised me when we were little, after Amelia died, there wasn't anything you wouldn't do to make me happy. Did you really mean that?"
"Angie, I was a kid, but yes, I still feel the same way. Now stop playing around and being so damn cryptic. What's going on?"
"I need your services, that's what." Taken aback, Kevin gaped at her.
"My services? Oh."
He softened his tone.
"You mean for..." "Don't worry, sweetie, it's all taken care of."
Motioning for him to hush, Angie leaned her head toward his and lowered her voice. "No, that's not what I meant. I need to arrange a funeral, a cremation to be exact." Kevin felt tears spring into his eyes.
"Oh, sweetie, I know you do. But it's all been taken care of. Drake said to wait."
Angie put her hand over his mouth to silence Kevin's words.
"Fuck what Drake said.
Yes, Kevin, I need to arrange a service for my daughter, but she isn't the only one. It will be a dual service. Mother and daughter." Kevin jerked his head away and gasped.
"What the hell? Don't you mean grandmother?"
"Kevin!" Angie snapped, her voice a low growl. "Sit back down and listen. You can ask all the questions you like when I'm done explaining, but until then, be still.
I don't have much time to lay out the entire plan, okay?
Despite his obvious misgivings about Angie's sanity, Kevin nodded.
Good. Okay, as I said, I need a dual cremation service. For me and my daughter. And for you to pull deep from your acting reservoirs. Congratulations, you're now head of neurology at St. Vincent's. You are going to convince my husband I'm brain dead and to sign the papers to pull the plug. Here's why. In hushed tones, her voice low and melodic, Angie told the painful, unbelievable story to her cousin. Kevin's face shifted from shock, grief, horror, and finally settled on rage. True to her instructions, Kevin never spoke while Angie told him everything and how he would play a pivotal role righting the wrongs done to her family. Once Angie finished, Kevin dropped two huge bombshells onto her already destroyed world. His words wiped all traces of doubt from her mind. They burned away the last remaining wisps of concern about whether what her brain remembered was true or not. Lit a fire deep inside her, destroyed her old life and thought patterns. The charred remains wanted, needed, craved revenge. The last sentence was spoken just as her father entered the room. Ashen from shock, he never said a word as he walked in. Anger wafted from him, stronger than his obnoxious cologne. With a slight nod toward Kevin, he held up a plastic sack, and Angie knew he found the evidence. In his other hand was a piece of paper. She recognized the format. It was a lab report. She didn't need to see it because she already knew the answer. Her father's facial expression said it all. He believed her. 100%. She waited until he sat on the other side of the bed. Once he was situated, Angie reached out both hands until each grabbed one. She squeezed her fingers and whispered, "Just as I said, right?" Daggers of fury danced behind her father's eyes. His response was a faint jutting of his chin. "I see you are on board now, Dad. Now that there is confirmation, Kevin, I assume you are as well?"
"Hell yeah."
"Excellent. Now, I need to know just one thing from you, Dad." Jerome's voice was tight, full of anger.
"Anything."
Locking her gaze with his, Angie asked, "Do you have a problem signing off on my fake death certificate? You are, after all, risking your license, not to mention prison time for conspiring with me to commit murder." Jerome's face was hard, set in stone. "If it means making the bastard pay for what he's done to us, not at all." Beaming, Angie replied, "Court is now in session. The guilty party is sentenced to death. So, here's what we're going to do to ensure Drake Benson not only doesn't get a fucking dime, but will never, ever hurt anyone again." Chapter 8. Difficult Choices. Drake woke up from haunting dreams to the sound of a sweet, sensual voice speaking his name. As his mind rose through the blackened waters of sleep and approached the bright light of consciousness, he tried to place the voice. He drew a blank about its source, as well as the strange smells around him.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Benson. Need to get your vitals, and then I'll be out of your hair. Your lunch is here, too. You need to eat. Lucky you. It's your last day of hospital food."
He blinked to clear the remaining cobwebs from his sleepy brain, forcing his stiff neck to nod in response. The face attached to the voice came into view and he recognized her. Lita something or other. He didn't say a word as she performed her assessment of his health. He remembered Lita from last year's Christmas party at the hospital. Angie had been assigned to Lita as a mentor at St. Vincent Memorial. Mind fully alert, visions of the accident 2 days ago appeared. The wreck that changed his life. He could still hear the sound of Angie's screams as the car careened across the slick ice. Remembered how his heart pounded in his chest. The sickening clatter of metal connecting with wood when the impact happened. The heavy thud, followed by shattering glass, as Angie's body plowed through the windshield. Then, deadly silence. Drake shuddered. Unwilling to relive the day, he pushed himself up on the bed. "How is she today?" A shadow of sadness crossed the young woman's face. He knew the entire staff found it difficult to see their colleague as a patient.
Well, they moved her to a private room, number 547. You'll need to remember that when you go to visit. Do you have someone coming to get you? If not, anyone you'd like me to call? Maybe Dr. Langford?
Drake moved to exit the bed, groaning from the effort. His broken leg and ribs ached, and when he leaned forward, the throbbing in his head made stars appear.
Haven't even thought about that, actually. Forgot I was being discharged today. Too much on my mind, I guess. I'll deal with that later. So, why did they move her?
Here, let me help you, Mr. Benson.
In less than a minute, he was situated in the wheelchair.
She'll recover faster in a private room alone. Want me to take you to her?
Drake shrugged Lita's arm off, his words short and clipped.
No, I'll manage.
Lita smiled warmly at him. She scanned the room, leaned down and whispered,
You just keep talking to her. I don't care what the doctors say. Coma patients can hear us. Angie knows you're there. Hearing your voice will bring her back, and your love will help ease the pain of losing your daughter for you both.
Fearing his emotions would overtake him, Drake nodded and wheeled himself out the door and down the hall toward his wife's room. He mentally prepared himself to spend another day at her side while he talked to her unconscious mind. Think of the right words to say, because so far, nothing had helped. He didn't know how many more days of looking at his wife's limp, lifeless body, tubes and machines keeping her alive, he could take.
We need to talk.
Drake jumped at the sound of the voice behind him. He looked up from his wife's frozen, pale face into the stern countenance of his father-in-law.
Now?
Yes, now.
Jerome barked, his voice heavy with anger. A sense of unease slithered up Drake's spine. Never in all the years he'd known him had Drake ever witnessed any sort of emotion from the man, other than boredom. Since the accident, he'd seen Dr. Langford only twice, and Annette once, which happened in the middle of the night right after he woke up from surgery. The meeting had been brief and ended when a sniveling, screaming, red-faced Annette slapped him across the face. The entire hospital probably heard the vile words she hurled at him, calling him a lowlife, weak idiot, among other things. She'd screamed at the top of her shrill voice that it was his fault, and when Angie woke up, she would insist her daughter divorce him. Spewed out how she would never, ever forgive him for causing the accident that killed her grandchild, because he wanted to play heroic husband rather than calling for help. As usual, Dr. Langford didn't try to rein in his out-of-control wife until she assaulted him. While Drake rubbed the sore spot on his cheek, Dr. Langford finally corralled his wife and dragged her kicking and screaming from his room. Dr. Langford moved his large frame inside the room and grabbed the handles of the wheelchair. He maneuvered Drake into the hall and out to the small waiting room. Another doctor, one he didn't recognize, sat in the back area in the corner, his face devoid of emotion. He looked vaguely familiar, something about his eyes, though Drake couldn't quite place where he knew him from. His stomach clenched as the doctor stood and acknowledged him.
"Afternoon, Mr. Benson."
Drake looked at his name tag, but it was too small to read from his position.
Who are you?
The man moved closer, extending his hand, but Drake refused to shake it. An eerie sense of dread ambled up his spine. Uncomfortable silence ensued as the man pulled his arm back.
I'm Dr. William Hope, head of neurology here at St. Vincent's. I'm sorry this is the first time we've had a chance to meet. We need to discuss the situation with your wife.
Why do I sense this isn't a conversation I want to have?
And where is Dr. Packard? I don't understand what's going on here. I thought he was Angie's attending physician.
Drake, we didn't bring you here to discuss your decision to drive Angie to the hospital instead of calling an ambulance. What's done is done.
His blood pressure increased at his father-in-law's dig.
I've already explained.
Dr. Hope leaned forward, his long, slender fingers clasped together like a monk in prayer. His watery brown eyes gazed at Drake's with intensity and compassion.
Dr. Packard is Angie's primary doctor, but called me in because I specialize in patients with traumatic brain injuries. We need to talk about Angie.
I concurred with Dr. Packard's diagnosis after running several tests on Mrs. Benson. The results are not good.
Drake swallowed hard, forcing the rising bile back down.
I don't understand. Why did you move her to a private room out of ICU? My nurse said it was because she'd stabilized. So which one of you is lying to me?
What are you saying?
His father-in-law moved around from behind him and sat next to Dr. Hope. Though Jerome tried to remain calm, Drake could see the heartache behind his eyes.
Angie was moved to the hospice sector of the hospital because she isn't just in a coma, Drake. She's in a permanent vegetative state. No brain activity, and only machines are keeping her body alive. There's nothing science can do for her now.
The impact of the words made Drake's heart pound. A heavy brick sat on his chest, making it hard to breathe.
No, she'll get better. She has to. She's all I have left.
Jerome leaned forward and shook his head.
She won't, Drake. Your wife, my daughter, is already gone. It's time to let her body go and rest in peace. Even if by some medical miracle she wakes up, her mind will be useless. Dr. Hope's test results are conclusive. She'd just be breathing on her own, but completely unaware of her surroundings. Unable to communicate, unable to feel, live, laugh, talk, walk. Do you really want to spend the rest of your marriage like that? Taking care of an invalid with a feeding tube, changing her diapers. Do you think Angie would want that? Breathing, but not really alive? I can guarantee you she wouldn't. And if you try to fight Mrs. Langford and me on this decision, you know, with some fancy legal moves to prolong the machines keeping her alive, you'll be in for one hell of a battle. We won't let our daughter suffer just because you are too much of a pussy to do the right thing. Dr. Langford, please. That's not going to help matters.
Dr. Hope interrupted. He stood and put a warm, comforting hand on Drake's shoulder.
If you wish, I can show you all the results, go into detail about what they mean, to help you understand. Give you the proper tools to make the final call. Because it is your call, Mr. Benson. You're the spouse. These papers can only be signed by you.
Drake tried to control his emotions as he looked at the consent form. Tried to dig deep, pluck out the right questions to ask, but words failed him. The thought of signing Angie's death warrant, the final beep of her heart after the machines stopped, hit him. Hard. He bent over and threw up all over the polished floor of the waiting room. The image of leaving the hospital alone slammed into his chest. Wiping the moisture from his lips, he whispered,
"No hope? None at all? You're sure?"
"Yes, we're sure. No brain activity whatsoever. Listen, I can't imagine how hard this is on you, especially after having to make the same call for your daughter. But as painful as this choice is, it's the right thing to do. Not for you, but for our Angie."
Drake locked his gaze with Jerome, felt the intensity in the words, the icy stare. Rather than respond, Drake nodded in agreement. With tears streaming down his eyes, hands shaking, Drake signed his name to the form.
"You made the right choice, Mr. Benson. Now, would you like to be with her when we..."
Dr. Hope asked, his voice quiet.
"Give me a moment, okay?"
"Of course." Drake watched both men leave the waiting area until they were out of sight. Once alone, he hung his head and let his true emotions run free.
Almost over.
Drake held his breath as Lita wheeled him down the quiet hallway. He was so sick of the smells of the hospital. The worst odor was the aroma of disinfectant that tried, but failed, to mask the stench of illness. Hold it together. In a few minutes, it will all be over. You'll never have to step foot in a hospital again. Use the disgust as a tool. Reformat it over to grief and sadness. Act the part of destroyed husband. Remember, keep quiet. Only give visual responses, no words. Don't want to slip and say the wrong thing. Behind him, Drake heard the strange squish-squash, squish-squash of Lita's nurse's shoes while she pushed the wheelchair. As they approached the door leading into Angie's room, she took in a deep, ragged breath. He'd been surprised when she showed up in his room earlier. Tears filled her pretty blue eyes as she asked to be present as not only a friend, but a witness for Angie's last moments on Earth. Drake simply responded, "Of course," his voice low and throaty. While he watched sadness ooze out of the sexy little nurse, he wondered if she would be willing to make some extra money on the side. Lita's tantalizing curves weren't hidden by the blue scrubs she wore. The desire to have her undress him, clean and care for his injuries, while he enjoyed the sensation of her hands on him, made his dick hard. He almost asked her as her full pouty lips quivered, but in the end, decided against it. He could wait another few weeks to empty his balls. It would be stupid and downright dangerous to boink Lita in the home he shared with Angie. Lita might become suspicious if he hit on her, so it was best to wait. Focus, Drake. Concentrate on what you are about to do, which is watch your spouse die. Play the part. Lita stopped at the door and knocked. Drake cleared his throat as Jerome opened it, and Lita pushed him inside. Drake scanned the room. Dr. Hope stood next to the machines, his face emotionless. The head of Angie's bed had been lowered, so the mattress was completely flat. Drake felt a sense of dread overtake him as he stared at the limp, unmoving body of the woman he'd spent a decade with. How strange to be present as she took her last breath. He watched Jerome shut the door and move over to Angie's side. Jerome's knees made a strange cracking noise as he eased his body into the chair next to the bed. In a flash, his hands sought out and clasped Angie's left hand, her right hand held at the wrist by Dr. Hope.
"Anything you'd like to say before?"
Dr. Hope queried, his voice quiet, professional. Drake felt something warm and wet drip onto his head, then another, and another. He realized it was Lita's tears as she stood behind him, shaking as she cried in silence. He watched Jerome shake his head no, close his eyes, and rest his head against Angie's arm. Dr. Hope continued to stare at Drake, waiting for a response. "Make it a good one. Take care of our baby in heaven. I'll miss you, my sweet Angie. I'm so sorry. I love you so much." Drake let his words trail away as his voice cracked with fake grief. Dr. Hope gave a curt nod and turned the machines off. No one made a sound as each collectively held their breath. Drake couldn't take his eyes off Angie's chest. He watched it rise, fall, rise, fall, and then it simply stopped. He knew she was gone. Could tell from the muffled sobs of Jerome. He felt Lita move from behind him, watched her walk across the room, and put an arm around Jerome's heavy shoulders. A strange look crossed her face as she glanced at Dr. Hope. They locked eyes for a brief moment, and Drake swore he saw something pass between them. "Oh, looks like my sexy nurse already has a honey. Too bad." Afraid his face might betray him, Drake lowered his head, both hands covering his face as though crying.
8:27 p.m. Central Standard Time. Lita, would you please go fetch Dr. Packard? We need another signatory agent on the certificate. Drake heard Jerome mumble. No, I'll do it. It's the last thing I get to do for my daughter. I was present at her birth, and now at her death. I'll sign it.
Drake refused to look up. He really didn't care who did what. He just wanted out of the room. The creepy factor of being near Angie's corpse made him shudder.
Lita, sign here, please.
Lost in thought, Drake nearly jumped when Dr. Hope raised his voice.
Drake, did you hear me? Are you okay?
Clearing his throat, Jake muttered,
No, sorry. What did you say?
A warm hand touched his shoulder. Drake looked into the eyes of Dr. Hope.
I asked if you have a particular funeral home you wish your wife's remains to be released to.
Before Drake could respond, he heard the throaty croak of Jerome answer.
Stephen's funeral home. They are our family, and they already have the baby. Agreed, Drake?
Unaccustomed to someone answering for him or taking charge, Drake stuttered.
Yes, that's fine.
Lita, would you kindly call Stephen's funeral home and arrange for someone?
Dr. Hope began. Drake didn't hear the rest of the conversation, or anything else for that matter. Lost inside his own mind, thinking about what he'd done, and what was left to do before the project completed, he zoned out. A few minutes later, Lita's warm hand patted his back. She leaned down and whispered in his ear,
"Ready to go, Mr. Benson?"
"Hell yes."
"Yes, please. I can't stand another minute of this pain."
Chapter 9. Saying Goodbye.
"Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life."
Drake let fresh tears slide down his face, his gaze focused on the funeral director. Soon the service was over. A handful of mourners inside the small sanctuary sat in the pews, waiting and watching as he maneuvered the crutches down the aisle. The outside air was freezing, and his leg and ribs throbbed from the cold. He would have been surprised at the lack of people, but given the weather, who could blame them? Yet another bout of snow arrived the night before, turning the roads into a slippery mess. Who wanted to attend the funeral of a mother and child who died from hazardous road conditions in the exact same weather? Thankfully, very few. He was sick and tired of playing the role of destroyed husband and father. All of the people in attendance were Angie's co-workers, including the foxy Lita. Wow, she looked so hot in black. And a few of her friends. Mostly, they were made up of Angie's relatives. Since Drake had none of his own, he endured the service alone in the front pew. It bothered him a little that none of his clients or friends attended, but in the end, it really didn't matter. He would blow town soon enough, start his life over again in a new city, one far away from the tragic memories of his former life.
"Drake, wait. Let me go get the wheelchair. It's too dangerous for you to be on crutches with all the ice."
Drake stopped and turned to the sound of his father-in-law's voice, cringing at the thought of Annette standing next to him. She'd been quiet during the ride to the funeral, her face hidden behind thick black sunglasses, her head covered with a black veil. The poor, distraught mother was in deep mourning for her precious, precious daughter. While on the drive over, and when they arrived at the service, Drake noticed Annette was unsteady on her feet. Angie's obnoxious cousin, Kevin, clung to one side, Jerome on the other, as they led her inside the sanctuary. He concluded Jerome drugged her to keep her quiet and calm during the service. Smart man, his father-in-law. The part he dreaded the most about attending the funeral was an emotionally charged Annette, bawling and squalling like a lost kitten throughout the service, or be forced to listen to her verbally shred him apart for killing her daughter. Thankfully, Jerome was alone. In his gnarled hands, he held the silver urn containing the ashy remains. To his left, Drake noticed the oh-so-sedated Annette was practically being carried to the parking lot by the cousin and Lita. Though too far away to hear what was being said, Drake could tell from the way Lita leaned down that Annette was talking to her. Judging by the disgusted look Lita shot him, the talk must have been about him. "Thanks, Annette. Whatever you just said ruined my chances at hitting that sweet piece." "Bitch." Shaking his head at the thought, Drake forced his facial muscles to suppress the smile itching to appear.
"Thank you, sir."
"No need," Jerome said, passing him at a brisk pace.
It didn't take long for Jerome to return with the wheelchair. Relieved to be rid of the crutches, Drake sank into the cold leather.
"I'm going to take you home, though I wish you'd take up our offer to stay with us until your leg heals."
Drake shook his head as Jerome wheeled him toward the SUV.
I appreciate the offer, but I need to work things out in my head.
Alone.
Not quite ready to talk about it."
"Understandable," Jerome replied, helping Drake into the front seat. "Figured that's what you'd say. Thought we'd stop on the way and get something to drink. God knows I'll need one tonight."
"Several, actually.
You?"
"Sir, I'm not up to going out."
"Well, of course not.
No, I meant stopping by the liquor store. If ever there is a perfect time to drink, it's now."
Drake didn't have a chance to respond. Jerome shut the door and walked around the truck, climbed in and eased out of the parking lot. They rode in silence until he pulled into Rafferty's Fine Wines and Liquor. He forced his face to remain neutral, The thought of toasting his newfound freedom made him want to smile. A nice glass of brandy would be great, but he decided on wine instead, afraid he'd get drunk and break his other leg. Besides, he'd already taken his pain pills and knew he'd take more when home. The weather was killing him. Wine he could tolerate with the meds, but not liquor. Jerome parked and looked over at him. For a moment, Drake almost felt sorry for him. In the last week, it seemed he'd aged 20 years and lost at least 10 pounds. Dark circles rimmed his eyes. The skin on his face drooped. His clothes hung off his body. He couldn't stomach looking at him. Mountain Reserve Cabernet Sauvignon, please. Reaching into his pocket, he pulled out his wallet. Paying for their drinks to toast Jerome's dead daughter was the least he could do. Jerome scowled and shook his head. Please, sir, I insist. With reluctance, Jerome took his card. It didn't take long for him to return, the paper sack in his hands full. Receipts inside, Jerome said, handing Drake back his card. Now, let's get you home so you can rest your leg. I'm sure the cold is bothering it, and it needs to be elevated. 10 minutes later, they pulled up to the house. It was the first time he'd been home in 5 days. After he was released from the hospital, he stayed at a hotel across the street because of the weather, even though Jerome protested his decision not to stay in his guest room. Drake begged off, saying he didn't want to be a burden, told Jerome to go home and take care of Annette, assured him he would be fine on his own, and the hotel was on the way to the funeral home. Eager to get inside and destroy the only evidence he'd left behind, Drake didn't wait for Jerome to retrieve the wheelchair. Pulling the house keys from his pocket, he handed them over and said, "I can manage if you'll open the door." "Of course." He was careful on the walkway, taking small steps. Jerome was right behind him, his hand hovering over his lower back. They reached the door and he watched the old geezer unlock it. Turning, Jerome asked, "Alarm code?" Drake hesitated. "No, it's okay. I can change the code later." 4389. Inside, the house was quiet. A twinge of worry hit him. Drake didn't like his father-in-law being inside. He couldn't risk the man going into the kitchen, so he stopped in the living room. "Thank you, sir. I think for the first few days I'll stay right here. Not quite ready to sleep anywhere but on the couch." Jerome set the wine and urn on the coffee table, nodding in agreement as he helped Drake to the couch. "Understandable. Anything you need before I go? I need to get back to my wife." Drake waved him away. "I'm fine, sir. Go, take care of Mrs. Langford, and yourself. Call me if you need anything. Oh, and if you feel up to it next week, we need to get together and discuss the trust. Since, well, you know, things have changed." Drake put on his best fake sad face. "Of course, sir. Whenever you and Mrs. Langford are ready. I'll be in touch. Goodbye, Drake." Drake listened to Jerome walk down the hall. On pins and needles, Drake held his breath until he heard the SUV roar to life, the crunch of the snow and ice under the tires as it left the driveway. He turned his head and watched through the window until the vehicle was gone. "Thank God." He stood and ambled to the kitchen, straight to the garbage. Leaning against the countertop, Drake's fingers shook as he removed the lid. Panic tore through his chest as he stared at the empty bin. For a few seconds, he froze, his mind replaying the day. No, he didn't take the garbage out. He didn't have time. The oxytocin worked faster than he'd anticipated. Shaking, afraid he would lose his balance, he tried to scoot toward the chair at the end of the counter. His heart skipped a beat when he saw a piece of lavender paper on the counter. "Mr. Benson, I sorry about Mrs. Benson and baby. You in my prayers. Clean house at no charge. If still need me, call Lupita." Unable to control his pent-up emotions, Drake burst out laughing. The smell of lemon-scented cleaner hit him. Scanning the kitchen, he noticed everything gleamed, including the floor. Of course, their maid cleaned. No, my maid. No, they anymore. Just me. Though he didn't like the idea of someone else disposing of the evidence, it was gone. One small garbage bag amongst thousands of others at the Pulaski County dump. It was all over. Drake was a free man. and soon, one who would be much wealthier. Grabbing his crutches, he headed toward the study. He had forms to fill out. He'd wait until an appropriate amount of time passed before he sent them in. No need in being greedy. He had plenty of time, and no one left to nag him about when and how he did things. Free at last. Free at last. Drake shouted inside the empty house. Once in the study, he struggled to situate himself behind his desk. After getting comfortable, he opened the drawer and extracted his cell phone. It was dead, so he bent down and grabbed the power cord and plugged it in. No telling how many missed calls, voicemails, texts, emails, and the like awaited him. Again, he had all the time in the world to sort through it all. He pulled out the insurance policy and the form to request benefits. Reaching across the desk for his fountain pen, he almost knocked over the picture at the end of the desk. The one of him and Angie on their honeymoon in Jamaica. He stared at it, reliving the memories. Her hair billowed behind her, limbs long and tan, a skimpy bikini barely covering her tits and ass. Picking her as a sugar mama had been a great idea, for Angie had been hot as a firecracker, even hotter in bed. Made it easier to play like he loved her, for Drake had enjoyed her many perks. 2 hours later, Drake sat at the kitchen table and stared at the graceful urn of silver that housed the remains of his wife and child. He ran his fingers over its smooth curves. The wind howled outside as another winter storm raged as night rolled in. Angie, Angie, Angie. I told you I didn't want children. You know what else I didn't want? You. I couldn't stand one more night next to you. Do you have any idea how pissed off I was when I found out you were pregnant? Almost killed you the night you told me. Stared at you in the dark while you slept. Pillow at the ready. Know what saved you that night? A thought. A notion. I remembered what happened to your retard sister, and I knew you would too. Ha! How easy was it to convince you to take out a large insurance policy? In case, gasp, something went wrong during your pregnancy. I'll tell you, candy from a baby easy. I'm a good actor, though, don't you agree? I certainly fooled you. If it's any consolation, I didn't plan on having any injuries. Lost my car, my treasured Beamer, and you know how much I loved that car. Guess what? A brand new one is in the wings. Think I'll name her Angie, in your honor. All of that was a small price to pay, and well worth the money. Being able to call myself a millionaire is better than any painkillers. He drained the glass of wine, his second, and reached for his crutches. Needed to piss before he was too drunk to hobble to the bathroom. Between the Percocet and wine, he was soaring high. After relieving himself, the large jacuzzi bathtub beckoned to him. It would be difficult, but he'd manage. The hot water would help warm his stiff, sore body. Scooting to the edge of the tub, he turned the water on and undressed. A bit afraid of being in too much water, he shut the spout off after only a few inches covered the bottom. He slid inside the warm water, careful to keep his leg propped up. Ah, it feels so good to be king. Drake took his time maneuvering across the slick hardwood floors. Lupita had outdone herself. They sparkled more than they ever had. When he re-entered the kitchen after his glorious warm bath, he noticed it wasn't just cold, it was frigid. He glanced over to the sliding glass doors. His mouth went dry when he realized they were open. Wet, snow-covered footprints went from the entrance over to the table, then toward the living room. His stomach did a weird little flip-flop. The urn was gone. "Who's there?" Drake whispered. He cleared his throat and tried again, louder. "Jerome?" "Wrong, Langford. Try again." Drake froze at the sound of his wife's voice from the living room. He shook his head thinking he must be hearing things, or his doped-up mind was playing tricks on him. "Guess what, darling husband? You helped prove a theory that's been argued about for centuries. Coma patients can hear while lost inside their minds, and I heard everything you whispered in my ear. When I woke up and told my father, we decided not to involve the police." Drake's body shook with terror and rage when Angie appeared in the doorway, holding the urn against her significantly smaller stomach. In her other hand, She held a gun, and it was trained on Drake's chest. Get a grip. You're imagining this. The pills and booze are making you hallucinate.
I'm still not quite sure if your chats with me were just said to clear your conscience or break my will to live. Either way, it doesn't matter. What matters is I heard you. Every word. Including how you let our child die and urged me to join her. It hit Drake then, like the proverbial ton of bricks. The black outfit, the black veil. Oh, shit. It was her at the funeral, not Annette. Drake backpedaled as Angie made her way toward him, her steps slow, methodic. She stopped at the table and set the urn down, simultaneously reaching into her pocket. Fear spread through Drake's chest when she pulled out a syringe. His heart nearly stopped beating when he realized Angie was wearing surgical gloves. Think. Keep her talking until you can reach the knives.
Angie, honey, oh God, you're alive. Thank goodness. I was hoping all this was just a horrid dream. It's so good to see you. Please come here. Let me hold you so I'll know this is real.
Oh, wow. Every word out of your mouth is a lie. You're good. I'll give you that. A-list actor, Oscar-worthy performance of a lifetime. Oh, and one that's lasted over 10 years. I should have heeded the advice of my parents and not married you. Except I was young, naive, and in love. Blinded by your charms. Thanks to your words, I'm not anymore. Angie's voice was hard, distant. Nothing remotely close to the woman Drake married. The harsh edge made his stomach roll. He needed to say something to knock her off balance, make her mind cloud with grief. Insanity danced behind her eyes.
You set me up. Must say I'm impressed by your will to live. Too bad you didn't wake up sooner, or you could have saved your retard daughter. It wasn't my idea to...
Angie stopped Drake's words by clicking the hammer on the gun.
Uh-uh, Drake. Not another word. You really believe that, don't you? You're a typical sociopath. Nothing is ever your fault. A monster like you doesn't deserve to be judged by a jury of your peers. Father and I judged you. I'm sorry to say the verdict was guilty and the penalty is death.
Locking gaze with his formerly dead wife, Drake saw the madness behind her eyes. They pulsed with fury. Her crazed look sent chills of terror up his spine. Drake had never been more frightened in his life. He would kick himself later for the asinine mistake of talking to Angie when she was unconscious. Right now, he had to figure out a way to survive. Needed a weapon. Drake felt the edge of the counter against his back. He lunged for the cutlery, but the crutches slid out from under him. He fell, his head slamming into the edge of the countertop before he tumbled face first onto the floor. Angie was on top of him before he could scramble back up. Her knees ground into his back. The full weight of her body pushed the air from his lungs. His cracked ribs sent shards of white-hot pain through him. Disoriented, he tried to move but couldn't. His arms were pinned beneath his torso. He felt Angie grab a handful of his hair, jerking his neck. The needle stung as it slipped into the skin. He tried to yank his arms free, but they were stuck. Gasping for air, he tried to kick her with his other leg and missed. Suddenly, he could breathe, and he knew Angie was no longer on top of him. He pulled in a lungful of air, determined to get to his feet and beat her to a bloody pulp. His plans disappeared as intense pain burned through his body. He couldn't stop his entire body from trembling. Potassium chloride, a gift from my father. A quick, yet painful death. Then a trip to the crematorium. Cousin Kevin enjoyed helping us fake my death. Oh, and he's a pretty good actor too, don't you agree? Pulled off the whole Dr. William Hope role.
Guess what? Angie growled, moving away from Drake. He can't wait to send you to eternity as a pile of ashes in the urn meant for me and our daughter. It's going to be such a sad crime scene. The poor, distraught husband has a heart attack after the stress of attending the memorial service for his wife and child. And true to your narcissistic nature, you added your own little twist. That bump on your head adds even more credence to your tragic ending. Drake's body was racked with pain as the convulsions set in. He tried to speak, to plead for help, but it was no use. His chest tightened, and he could feel his heart beat erratically.
but it was distant, muffled. Don't worry about the money. Since my parents were listed as alternate beneficiaries, I'm sure they will enjoy the new condo they've been looking at in Costa Rica. You know, a beautiful place to escape to and heal after the death of their daughter and grandchild. Plenty left over to pay for a full-time live-in housekeeper when they aren't there. Enjoy your permanent vacation in hell, you fucker. It was the last thing Drake heard before he took his last gurgling breath. Where did I go wrong? Chapter 10. Plan B. Angie watched as her traitorous husband writhe and jerk on the floor until he took his last gulp of air. She waited until his bowels evacuated to motion to her father. He appeared from the hallway, his face whiter than the snow outside. He bent down and checked for a pulse. For a full minute, neither of them said a word. She busied her hands by refilling the syringe. Watched her father as he kept his focus on her dead husband. Finally, he stood and shook his head, a sick, twisted smile on his face. Ding dong, the dick is dead. Moving past her father, Angie picked up the urn from the table and held it close to her chest. My baby. Mommy's getting justice. Almost finished. Angie watched her father pull his cell from his pocket. Wait, Dad. We need to make sure he's too far gone, so no matter how hard they try, the paramedics can't revive him. Oh, and remember, you need to make it look like you tried first. You know, the heroic father-in-law performed CPR to save his son-in-law after stopping by to check on him, but was too late. Oh, that's right. Sorry, I'm sort of flying blind here. First murder and all, Jerome muttered. Need to get something from the study. Be right back. Go ahead and start, Angie said over her shoulder as she walked past him. Angie heard the hitch in his voice as he tried to play off his fears. She was actually surprised he'd not only agreed to take part in the epic plan for revenge, but did so without much prodding. Why are you surprised? You know he's killed before. She waited until he was situated next to Drake and was struggling to turn Drake over. Sorry I can't help you, but don't want to contaminate the scene, right?
Right, Jerome replied out of breath. He grimaced as he pinched Drake's nose, yanking his mouth open.
As Jerome performed CPR, in seconds his hands and shirt were covered in blood from the nasty gash on Drake's forehead. He was breathing hard. Angie could see his shoulders sag with the effort of performing chest compressions. Her strides were quick and purposeful as she walked down the hallway to the study and over to the desk.
Idiot didn't even try to hide the insurance papers.
They were in plain view on the desk, filled out with his meticulous penmanship, neatly stacked in the middle of the desk. Scooping them up, Angie turned and left Drake's den of iniquity without another look. It was time to initiate Plan B. As she walked down the hallway back to the kitchen, Angie could hear the labored grunts as her father continued to perform CPR on a dead corpse. Much more effort than you gave to poor Amelia. She walked past him and tossed the insurance papers on the counter. They landed with a soft thump. Some of the pages slid off the slick surface and onto the floor. Satisfied it looked like a scuffle occurred, she withdrew the gun and syringe from her pocket.
Dad, you know when I said I heard everything Drake said to me while unconscious?
Uh-huh,
Jerome replied, his voice barely audible as he pushed. Well, that's not all I heard. Or remembered. Angie paused, waiting for a reaction. In mid-pump, her father froze.
And you know what? Seeing you trying to revive a dead person brings back a very disturbing memory from my childhood. One I suppressed for years. Guess getting my bell rung released it.
Jerome didn't turn around to face his daughter. Instead, he let his arms fall to his sides, his head hung low.
You know, don't you?
It almost looked like he was praying, which Angie knew he wasn't. Dr. Jerome Arthur Langford would never waste his precious time praying to any deity. He didn't need to, for he worshipped himself. Through Angie's clenched jaws, she muttered,
Yes, everything. You killed Amelia, smothered her to death in the middle of the night. Her crying woke me up, but by the time I crept out of bed and made it to her room,
It was too late. You'd already killed her. The pillow was still in your hands. I must have blocked it out. Why wouldn't I? I mean, what kid wants to keep the memory of watching her own father do such a reprehensible thing? Jerome turned his face toward Angie, tears streaming down his cheeks. His shoulders bobbed up and down as he sobbed.
She wasn't right, Angie. She never would be either. Ever. We would be taking care of an infant for years. You know how fragile your mother is. She couldn't handle caring for a child with special needs. I wanted to send her away, to a home so she'd have round-the-clock care. But your mother...
Angie growled, moving closer, the gun aimed at the center of his forehead. My mother loved Amelia, just like I did. We didn't care about her issues. Didn't love her any less because she was special. Just like I wouldn't have loved mine any less. But no, you took advantage of the situation. Had my blood tested while I was out cold. When the results came back, you convinced Drake to not let Dr. Randolph stop the contractions or resuscitate her if she stopped breathing. Waited until I delivered my special little girl and didn't even try to revive her. Then you had the nerve to tell me it was for the best. I heard every fucking word. Holding his hands up in a desperate attempt to calm his mentally disturbed daughter, Jerome pleaded,
"Oh, Angie, it was for the best. You don't know what kind of burden it would have been on you. I do. And look what happened with Drake. I didn't know what he did to you. The baby, when the decision was made, what if she would have lived? You would have the burden of raising her, plus try to deal with the fact your husband tried to kill you? Please stop this nonsense. Put the past to rest just like I've done all these years. If you don't, you'll end up just like your mother."
Rage blinded her and Angie lunged, kicking Jerome so hard in the abdomen he doubled over. He rolled on his side on the floor, the air knocked from his lungs. In a flash, she knelt next to Drake, grabbed his right hand, and wrapped it around the gun. Her father was weak from performing CPR and was struggling for air, unmoving. Forcing Drake's dead hand up with her own, she aimed the gun at her father's chest. "For Amelia, for Mom." Angie pulled the trigger, letting the gun clatter to the floor after the bullet ripped through the good doctor's torso. For a few seconds, stunned by what she'd done, she just stood and stared at him, her breath coming in heavy rasps. The smell of gunpowder filled the kitchen. Blood covered the cabinet and floor. His body crumpled mere inches away from Drake's. "You destroyed Mom's mind, you bastard. Weren't there for her when she needed you the most. And now she's gone. Did you even cry when you found out your wife was dead? I certainly never saw a tear. Oh, and you almost destroyed my mind, too. Turned me into a murderer, that's what you did. Drake? Nah, I would have just let the police handle him. But your words and what you did to our little family broke me. Broke her. You killed your own child, watched your wife fall apart, all because you were incapable of love. True, real love. Even years later, you let your wife down when you should have been there, by her side. It didn't matter to Angie that her father would never hear the words. She said them, lancing the pain inside her own mind. Looking around at her handiwork, she forced her stomach to calm down. The two men, who'd done such unspeakable things, hurt so many people, killed for no reason, were gone. There was one thing left to add to the crime scene. Reaching in her father's pocket, she pulled out the syringe, empty vial of oxytocin, the package it came in, and the most important piece of all, the lab report. With a flick of her wrist, she tossed them onto the floor near Drake's body. The crime scene would be easy to piece together. Doubts about his son-in-law's story began to simmer inside the old doc's mind. Too many unanswered questions, holes in his story. The inquisitive mind of a renowned physician kicked in. A lab test confirmed his suspicions. So, he decided to go talk to him, clear the air, his bereaved mind in overdrive after attending the funeral of his only child. What he found was a drunk,
doped-up Drake, who'd just finished filling out the insurance forms for his wife, and was busy trying to dispose of the evidence that could nail him to the wall. Of course, the wise doctor immediately recognized the vial, picked it up, showed Drake the lab report, and questioned the reasons for oxytocin in Drake's possession. A horrible, horrible argument ensued, resulting in a violent confrontation. The distraught doctor pulled his gun, the guilty son-in-law tried to fight back, and they fell to the floor. A tussle for the gun ended with a fatal shot. Poor Drake Benson, already teetering on the edge from his crimes, the alcohol and drugs, topped off with a nasty head wound, suffered a heart attack. How fucking tragic. Without another glance at either of the men who tried to ruin not only her world, but her mother's, Angie picked up the urn from the table and retraced her steps out the sliding glass door. Fresh snow covered her tracks from earlier, but to be safe, she snatched the rake leaning against the house and walked backwards, making sure to smooth away her steps. Once she reached the tree line at the edge of her yard, she turned and jogged through the cover of trees, the urn in one hand and the rake in the other. Within minutes, she was near the sign leading into their subdivision. Her salvation awaited inside the warm confines of Kevin's SUV parked across the street. Reaching the vehicle, she held up the rake, and Kevin exited, running to the tailgate. He opened it, and she tossed in the rake without a word. Neither of them said anything as they ran to the doors and jumped in. Kevin pulled onto the highway. They rode in silence for several miles. He knew what she'd done. There was no need to talk about it. As the adrenaline rush waned, the impact of what she had done slammed into Angie's mind. A killer. She'd committed cold-blooded, premeditated, perfectly executed murder. Twice. Like father, like daughter. Angie shuddered when they passed the spot where the accident happened. She tried, but couldn't stop her body from shaking. Kevin noticed Angie's apprehension. Making sure his voice was calm, soothing, he said, "It's okay, Angie. I've always had your back. Always. I'll get you home soon, don't worry." For the first time in days, Angie relaxed a bit, leaning her head back against the warm seat. "Aunt Miriam?" "Fine. The call's been made, just like we planned. Cops should arrive soon at Drake's. Well, depending on the roads." Angie stared through the windshield and watched the snow float to the ground. Soon the snow would melt and become a distant memory to all who witnessed it, just like she would, and Drake, and her father. Angela Renee Langford Benson was gone, her life cut short by tragedy, cremated with the tiny corpse of her unborn daughter, remembered by no one except those who truly loved her. She could live with that, would live with that. After all, she didn't do this only for herself. She looked over at Kevin, her rock, the man who believed the unbelievable, who helped her overcome obstacles that should have killed her soul, risked his life and his livelihood to help Angie obtain her revenge, the one who helped fill in the gaps to her plan. Her amazing cousin had accomplished so much in such a short time. Kevin had wheeled her out of the hospital in a body bag after playing the role of Dr. Hope with uncanny accuracy. Held Angie in the hospital bed while she sobbed after he broke the news of her mother's death. Took care of her mother's remains without question. Her mother's suicide was the final, last cord, tethering her to the part of her mind that whispered her plans were wrong. Nearly broke her. But it was her wonderful cousin who took her to Aunt Miriam's house so she could hide and recover until all her plans were completed. The part that struck her the most was when Kevin told her that he and his mother had known for a while that her father had killed Amelia. Before Kevin's own father passed away, while on his deathbed, he finally told his wife and son the reason he hated his brother-in-law Jerome so much. One night, right after her mother's first breakdown and stint in the hospital, Uncle Cliff had gone to check on Jerome, found him drunk in his study, crying at his desk, sobbing about what he'd done to Amelia. Afraid of what the news would do to his psychologically fragile sister-in-law, Clifford Stevens never told a soul until the day before he died. So when Angie told Kevin about what she remembered while in a coma, he believed every word. After he related what he knew to be true, It solidified Angie's decision to carry out her plans. Yes, to make good on the promise he had made to her over 30 years ago, her cousin had risked everything for her, and Angie loved him for it.
Thank you, Kevin. I don't...
Kevin shook his head.
No, don't. Just rest now.
You need all your strength and wits about you. This isn't over yet. You know that. Besides, family doesn't need to thank family for being family, right?
Angie bit her lip to keep her tears inside. He was right, and she knew it. She needed to mentally prepare for the role of a lifetime. It was one thing to mask her real identity from others, hidden by clothes, sunglasses, and a veil. Pulling it off in front of the police was another. She had to think of the right words to say without saying much. Once she did, it would be over. Kevin and Aunt Miriam were all she had left, and they would work together as one unit to get beyond the betrayal, the sorrow, the immense damage to all their souls. Then, finally, the entire nightmare needed to be buried, locked away and never discussed again. Wrongs had been righted. Penance paid.
Right. Hey, you remember how much it used to annoy your parents when we'd be in the back seat asking repeatedly, "Are we there yet?"
Kevin smiled at her and reached across the space between and patted her hand.
Don't you dare start that.
I won't, because I already know the answer. Almost there.
Chapter 11. Silencing the Voices. Angie sat in silence, staring at the note in her lap. Part of her wanted to throw it away, but she couldn't. It was her last tie to her mother, so she would keep it, no matter how much it pained her to read the words. Shifting her glance, her gaze settled on the beautiful jar with an ornate lid on the table next to her. The solid silver urn held what was left of her mother and child. Their ashes intermingled with each other. Forever. The words on the fine white paper burned in her mind, seared into her memory banks. They would remain a part of her until she died.
Amelia and my granddaughter need me. Going to take care of them.
12 simple words, written in her mother's flowing handwriting. 12 words, wiping out an entire life. Raising her misty eyes from her lap, Angie looked at the bed. The place where her mother took her last breath after downing an entire bottle of pills. Her mother waited until the middle of the night, not even 24 hours after her father had dumped her off. Poor Aunt Miriam found her beloved sister early the next afternoon. The same afternoon Angie woke up.
Oh, just one day earlier.
Honey, could you come here for a moment? Angie wiped the tears from her face, careful to miss the still tender spots on her forehead and cheeks. Turning around, she saw Aunt Miriam in the doorway. A sharp sting of sorrow punched a hole in her chest.
God, they look enough alike to be twins.
It was time. She could tell from the look on Aunt Miriam's face.
Be right back, you two. Love you,
Angie said, kissing the top of the urn. Folding her mother's last words, she slid them under the pillow. Aunt Miriam held the door open and they walked out into the hallway. Kevin stood in the doorway to his old room, smiling.
Time for me to transform you. That call earlier was the one we've been waiting for.
Angie glanced at Aunt Miriam, who nodded in agreement. In a quiet voice, Miriam responded.
A detective called. Said he needed to talk to your mother. He'll be here in an hour.
A spark of worry sent a chill down Angie's spine.
Did you tell him?
Miriam put her hand on Angie's arm and gave it a reassuring rub.
Of course, dear.
Already laid the groundwork. I explained the fragile state Mrs. Annette Langford is in. Kevin offered.
I made sure to bring it up while they questioned me yesterday. Told them everything like we planned. Stop worrying. We've got this.
Angie smiled.
Thank you.
Come on, cuz. Need to work my magic.
Angie's legs trembled as she walked into Kevin's room. Kevin ushered her to the chair near the dresser and patted Angie's shoulder.
Stop shaking, or it will take me longer. Like I said before, you've got this. Then it will truly be over.
Nodding, Angie closed her eyes and took a deep breath. Kevin began, his fingers moving over her face with practiced ease, mindful of the tender spots. He couldn't help but smile as he transformed daughter into mother. 3 hours later, it was all over. Finally. The detective had arrived, spoke in a professional, hushed voice as he relayed that Dr. Jerome Langford was dead, along with her son-in-law. A few times he struggled to find the right words to say. Angie played the role of her mother as a destroyed, broken woman with gusto. In truth, it wasn't actually an act. It was the first time she really released the pain inside her heart. The plus side was it allowed her to bury her head in Kevin's strong shoulder for most of the visit, allowing her to keep her face hidden. When the detective broached the subject of murder and what the investigation concluded, even he choked up a few times. Angie's worries about the potassium chloride in Kevin's role as Dr. Hope were vanquished when the detective finished. She watched him rise from his spot on the couch, hand his business card to Aunt Miriam, mumble his apologies, mentioned names and numbers of support groups, and again how sorry he was for what had happened. Angie played her part well, shaking his hand, thanking him for coming in person, for his honesty and kindness under such trying circumstances. Aunt Miriam escorted him to the front door, and in minutes she returned, alone. The three of them sat in silence, each one grappling internally with the news. Though the autopsy of Drake Benson showed high levels of potassium chloride in his system and a needle mark on his neck, it was concluded Dr. Jerome Langford injected him with it at the same time the gun was fired. According to the detective, they'd checked the medication room at the doctor's office, and two vials were missing. Kevin never actually signed the death certificate as Dr. Hope, only faked it. The only two signatures were that of Dr. Jerome Langford, attending physician, and Lita Kendrick, witness. The detective never once mentioned anything about Dr. Hope, and none of them dared ask. Since Lita had been so upset, it was among the realm of possibilities she'd forgot he'd been in the room. However, Angie didn't believe that. Lita was too good of a nurse. The most likely scenario was simple. The detectives didn't know about Dr. Hope, so they never thought to inquire about him. Lita simply didn't bring him up. The detective's final report concluded exactly the way Angie had envisioned it. The case was closed, and the bodies were released for burial. Drake Benson's actions eventually killed his wife. His father-in-law figured it out, decided to take justice into his own hands, and succeeded, only to end up losing his life in the process. The detective warned the entire family about the media, cautioned that once he released the final report, the news hounds would be at their door. Actually suggested they use a family spokesperson to deal with the reporters, maybe even leave for a while, pull themselves together as a family, grieve in private away from the constant intrusion into their personal lives, which was precisely what they had planned. In 2 days, they would be on a flight heading to Limon International Airport, a much-needed vacation in the beautiful country of Costa Rica to recoup from the nightmare. The last thing she'd said to the detective rang through Angie's mind. "I want to spread the ashes of my family there. Let the waters of the Pacific carry them to paradise. Let the painful memories float away on the trade winds." The man hadn't said a word in response, only gave a slight nod of his head in agreement. Angie broke the stillness in the living room first. "Kevin?"
"Yes?"
Angie took a deep, cleansing breath, letting the action clear her overtaxed mind. Closing her eyes, she rubbed her fingers against her temples, hoping to ease the throbbing headache. "Did you pick up all the things I asked you to from Mom's?" Kevin nodded.
"Yes, all safe and sound in my closet."
Though she tried, Angie couldn't bring her lips to form a smile. It just seemed wrong at this point. For a moment, she wondered if there would ever be a time in the future when it would feel right. Voice hoarse from crying, she said, "Thank you. Would you mind bringing me Mom's checkbook? I have some checks to write out." Kevin rose from the chair and headed toward the hallway.
"Of course."
Once gone, Angie looked over at Aunt Miriam. In the last 2 weeks, it seemed her sweet aunt had aged 20 years. Her face was ashy, the sheen gone from her gray hair. Thin shoulders sagged under the weight of the nightmare. An air of sadness cloaked her normally bubbly demeanor. She looked at least 10 pounds lighter, and Aunt Miriam didn't need to lose any weight. A twinge of guilt at involving both Kevin and her aunt in her plans made Angie's stomach roll. Miriam noticed her niece staring, worry etched across her brow. A lump of hot tears formed in her throat. "Kevin did a fine job. It's like I'm staring at Annette's ghost." Rising from her perch on the couch, Miriam crossed the room and sat down next to Angie. "Honey,
Please don't look at me like that. I know exactly what you're thinking, and you're wrong. Kevin and I wanted to be a part of righting the wrongs done to all of us. Those two men ruined so many lives. Took many lives. My husband suffered for years in silence. Can't prove it, but I believe the nasty secret ate Clifford's insides away, causing him to die so young. And your mother, God rest her soul.
Miriam stopped, cleared her throat of the heavy lump of tears before continuing.
She never got over losing Amelia. And you, Lord child, you buried your pain. What you saw all your life, it kept you from truly living. You only existed. Now you can live.
Angie looked into the eyes of the woman she considered more than an aunt. Miriam was, and always had been, like a second mother. The strange thoughts she'd experienced while in a coma about life, death, what being alive really meant, sped to the forefront of her mind. Her plans all along, from the minute she regained consciousness, was to get her revenge and then do the same exact thing her mother had, end her life, join her loved ones on the other side, living with the pain, the sorrow, the unbelievable betrayal, wasn't what she'd wanted. Upon awakening, her mind had been controlled by two things, revenge and fury. She didn't acknowledge Kevin as he sat down next to her, placing the checkbook in her lap. Aunt Miriam's loving gaze never left her own, and Angie could feel the love pulsating from both her aunt and cousin. It was in that moment, the split second of time, her comatose questions were answered, and her plans changed. Being alive means another day to try and make things right. Plain and simple. I won't add a final sour note to what Dad and Drake did. Won't let these tragedies define who I am, who we are as a family. I can't. We will go to Costa Rica as planned, but I won't let it end by following the ashes of Mom and my daughter into the waters. The three of us will pull together as a family. Heal.
Kevin watched with a heavy heart as his beloved cousin fought the monsters inside her shattered mind. He could see the emotions tearing Angie apart. Unsure what he could say, or do, to reach her, Kevin simply opted to hug her tight. His thick, muscular arms swallowed up Angie's frail body as he pulled her into his chest. He closed his eyes as tears streamed down his face, but not before he saw the same fall from his mother's eyes. Within seconds, he felt his mother add her thin arms and body to the pile. Angie was sandwiched between them. Kevin said a silent prayer, hoping the warmth of their embrace would bring Angie some sort of peace.
"Okay, can't breathe in here," Angie muttered, her face smashed against Kevin's strong chest.
Kevin and Aunt Miriam both laughed, immediately letting go. Angie took a gulp of air, wiping her tears away.
"I've picked the two charities I want the insurance proceeds from."
Angie couldn't stand the thought of saying father and husband. "The policies to go. Parents of murdered children will receive Jerome's policy proceeds, and Drake's will go to the Pulaski County Battered Women's Shelter. Anonymously, of course. Kevin, will you take care of things for me?" Choking back his tears, Kevin replied,
"Angie, no need to ask. You know I will. I think both choices are perfect."
Miriam interjected, "Agreed, though I still don't agree 100% with your decision not to keep the money." Angie bristled as she wrote out the checks.
"I will not have any part of that blood money, period. Every penny will be a constant reminder of how I got it, how dirty my own hands are, and the suffering surrounding it. No way. Besides, between the other bank accounts and the trust, which will roll back to me, there's plenty. Enough, in fact, that once we get to Costa Rica, I think I want you two to help me find a permanent residence there. I don't want to remain here, and really can't, given the fact my real identity could be compromised in a flash."
"You don't want to come back? Ever?" Miriam gasped. "Can you blame her? Of course she doesn't,"
Kevin interrupted.
"I think that's a fine idea, Angie, a fine idea. Besides, it will give us a chance to take numerous vacations throughout the year to come visit. Oh, Christmas in the tropics will be a new adventure."
Angie watched Aunt Miriam's face, searched her eyes, hoping understanding and acceptance would appear. Her wait was rewarded.
"May I join you?
Tears sprang into both Angie's and Kevin's eyes, but for entirely different reasons.
I can't think of anything I'd enjoy more, Aunt Miriam.
Miriam and Angie turned their focus to Kevin. He watched the two women he loved more than anything else in the world stare in silence, their eyes pleading. With a shrug of his shoulders, he smiled and said,
I can't let you two enjoy all the tropics have to offer alone, now can I? Besides, I've heard that Costa Rican women are gorgeous. So why not?
Miriam stood and went over to the liquor cabinet and grabbed a bottle of champagne. Kevin and Angie followed, and in seconds, the three of them clinked their crystal glasses together.
To new adventures, Miriam chirped.
Kevin joked.
To tanned lovelies in skimpy bikinis.
Angie cleared her throat, her hand instinctively resting on her stomach.
To being alive, and the chance to truly live.
Winton Brewer shrugged on his jacket as he exited the glass doors at Pulaski Tech. The night air was cold on his face, but at the moment, he didn't care. He was riding high after algebra class tonight. The final homework assignment he'd turned in, the one full of quadratic equations he never thought he'd understand, clasped in his fist. It was his first A ever received in math, and he was proud of himself. Once inside his car, he sent a text to Amy, asking her to meet him at Zarino's, their favorite restaurant. He knew he wouldn't have to wait long for a response, because Amy loved the place. Amy pestered Winton to eat there at least once a week, doing her best to use her body as a weapon to cajole him into saying yes. By the time he reached the edge of the parking lot and turned onto Roosevelt, Amy responded asking, why? Using voice to text, Winton replied,
exciting news, tell you when you get there.
10 minutes later, Winton sat in a small booth at the back of the restaurant. It was close to 10, and Zarino's closed at 10:30, so the place was practically empty. As he was escorted to a booth, he noticed only one other customer. Only one lone patron sat at the bar, sipping a glass of wine while staring at the wall. He ordered 2 glasses of Moscato and a basket of garlic bread with balsamic vinaigrette dressing. While waiting for Amy to arrive, he glanced over at the television set on the wall above him, then over to the rigid body of the woman at the bar. Her attention was focused on the television screen, the look of sadness unmistakable. She was attractive for an older woman, probably had been a real looker in her younger days. Taking a sip of water, he switched his gaze to the TV and watched half-heartedly as the images flashed by on the display. When one he recognized appeared, Winton choked on his water. Without thinking, he yelled to the bartender across the room,
"Hey, would you turn up the volume, please?"
"No, management says."
Winton bristled as he wiped the water from his shirt.
"Seriously? Turn it up. I worked that accident."
Annoyed by Winton's outburst, the bartender complied. Winton watched in horror as the top story on KTHR filled the screen. His heart pounded in his chest when the accident scene appeared again. Thankfully, the camera crew didn't film, or at least the station decided not to show, the blood-stained snow. As Winton listened to the sexy blonde reporter tell the story, his stomach clenched. It wasn't just some random accident, and the wreck was only the beginning of a nightmare for the entire family. When the smiling faces of Drake and Angie Benson flashed on the screen and the reporter said Mr. Benson had planned out the death of his wife, Winton's mouth went dry. Such a beautiful woman, and her own husband killed her. He couldn't stop himself and gave a small fist pump when the story turned to the father of the woman and what his reaction had been. When the screen changed and zeroed in on the video of the grief-stricken mother slash widow as she shuffled to an awaiting SUV, Winton's stomach soured. What a crazy turn of events. Daddy slays daughter's killer, but then is murdered as well? The poor woman lost her entire life in such a short time. Good God, what a horrible story! Winton blurted out to no one. He listened to the rest of the report, surprised when a lump of sadness pressed against his chest. Winton motioned for the bartender to turn the volume down. Honestly, he didn't want to listen to any more. The thought of being so cruel to anyone, especially someone you loved, made his heart ache. He thought about his own family, about Amy, how much he loved her, wondered what in the world could turn their love into hate so strong. The only solution seemed to be to commit murder. Guess the old phrase about there being a fine line between love and hate was true. The news report also brought a sense of mortality to the surface of Winton's thoughts. Life could be over in the blink of an eye. He didn't know why, only guessed it was because he saw the aftermath of the accident, but the story crawled under his skin. The woman at the bar turned her gaze to Winton, a strange look crossing her face. Even from across the room, Winton could see the pain behind her green eyes. The second their gazes locked, Winton felt his mouth drop open. He was helpless to shut it again. It was her. In a quiet voice, she said, "Yes, quite the tragedy. I believe I heard you say you worked my daughter's accident." Winton scrambled for words. He wanted to crawl under the table. Embarrassment from his earlier comments sent heat rushing into his cheeks. What do you say to someone who just lost their entire family? While his mind sorted through a myriad of comebacks, he stared at the face of the woman. What did the report say her name was? Annette something or other? Think, Winton. Think. Finally, he muttered, "Yes, ma'am. I am so very sorry for your loss." Angie eyed the young man, watching him squirm. She sensed his kindness, concern. Guess there are still some people left in this world who have a heart. Then again, my ability to judge others hasn't always been accurate. Losses, she corrected. Taking a last sip of her drink, she watched the kid nod his head in agreement, his cheeks bright red. She rose and walked over to his table. Losses. I just... forgive me. I don't know what to say. I can't imagine. Winton's voice cracked. Angie stopped at the edge of the table and stuck out her hand. When the kid reciprocated, she felt the sweat from nerves on his palm. A small grin appeared on her face. Thank you, Mr. Brewer. Winton Brewer. But I don't understand. Why are you thanking me?
Ah, Mr. Brewer. I'm Annette Langford. Although, judging by the look on your face, you already figured that out. You seem different than most people I've met lately. Saddened by the news, not drawn to it. In other words, you have a heart and conscience. Not many nowadays do. At least not ones I've run into recently. You brought a spark of hope back into my dim world.
Before Winton could say anything, she let go of his hand and walked back over to the bar. Sensing the strange interaction was over, Winton kept quiet. He tried not to stare, even turned his head away from the bar. His mind wandered back over to the night of the storm. The sounds, smells, and sights made him zone out. He jumped a fraction when Amy poked her head over his shoulder, his eyes flying open.
"Hey, baby, what are we celebrating?" Amy asked, planting a light kiss on Winton's cheek.
Winton looked around for Mrs. Langford, but she was gone. Then he spotted her near the doorway, a strange, vacant look on her face. She gave a slight nod, then disappeared as the bartender moved into his line of vision. Winton noticed he held a bottle of champagne.
"Compliments of the lady," he said, popping the cork.
Amy clapped her hands like a little girl, plopping down on the seat across from Winton.
"My first ever A in math," Winton finally answered.
"Congratulations, sir. Please order when ready."
"Give me a second to figure out what I want, okay?" Amy piped up.
"Yes, ma'am. By the way, your dinner has been paid for. Oh, and the lady asked me to give you this."
The bartender left, and Amy let her lips curl into a teasing grin.
"An A? What, did you cheat on the final or something?"
Winton ignored the baited dig as he opened the napkin. Scrawled in bright blue ink were the words, "Bask in today, because tomorrow may never arrive." In other words, live. Winton stared at the note in silence, a strange look on his face. Intrigued by his sudden mood shift, Amy asked,
"Hey, what lady was that waiter talking about? And why a bottle of champagne? Were you flirting with someone before I arrived?"
Winton swallowed hard as he refolded the note.
"Baby, I've only got eyes for you. Cheers."
Amy lifted her glass in response. They clinked glasses. Amy wouldn't let the subject drop.
"Nice enough, but it didn't answer my question. Who bought us dinner and why?"
"You aren't going to believe this, but I just met the mother of the woman Lita's been so upset about. You know, the car accident I worked during the storm."
Amy gasped.
"Are you serious? Her friend, Angie?"
Winton nodded.
"Yep, felt like a real ass. Had no clue who she was. Then the report came on the TV.
I said some things about it out loud and she heard me. Came over here and introduced herself. Actually thanked me for, well, I'm still not quite sure why. Being repulsed by the whole story, I guess?
Amy glanced around, making sure the waiter was out of earshot. She leaned across the table, motioning to the napkin.
So, what did the note say?
Winton slid the paper over to Amy, a smile of melancholy on his face. He watched Amy read it. Tears filled her eyes, making the lump in his throat from earlier reappear. Amy cleared her throat as she raised her glass.
To living.
Winton nodded as the rim of his glass met Amy's.
No doubt.
The cold air felt good against Angie's flushed face. She walked across the dark parking lot toward her mom's car. No, my car. Once inside, Angie simply stared at the red and blue Zarinos sign. The decision to raise a glass in bitter mocking defiance in the place where her last anniversary should have been spent was her final act. Tomorrow, she would board a flight and leave the U.S. Forever. What an ironic twist of fate, meeting the kid who worked the accident. It was a fitting end to a horrid nightmare. He was there when it began and when it ended. Winton Brewer would be the last person she spoke to while on American soil. Tomorrow, her new life would begin in Costa Rica. No, not just my life. I am, after all, living for them all. For Mom, my baby, for Amelia, for me. This has been Whispered Pain, written by Ashley Fontaine, narrated by Andrea Ems. Copyright 2015 by Ashley Fontaine. Production copyright 2015 by Ashley Fontaine.